Order of members. SKG and the departmental official from DBE, the leadership of Omalusi, and our own staff, I suggest that we get started with the business of the day. We are going to start with the introduction. After the introduction, we are then going to give 45 minutes to Omalusi to do the presentation. I suggest if members would allow us, because we've got some constraints, that you don't ask the questions for after my presentation. We note them. Then we head over to DBE to do their presentation. Then when everybody has done the presentation, we then come back to questions, because maybe there are issues that Omaris would be able to respond to after the presentation by DBE. And conversely, there are issues that Omaris would be able to respond to after the presentation. So I would suggest that, you know, for us to save time, let us note our question, and then question goes to the department and the entity after all presentation. I don't know if members would allow the kind of approach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, good morning everybody. I think the approach will be very, very appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Let us introduce ourselves then. I am Lynette Wan, the Chairperson of Education and Information Select Committee of the National Council of Provinces. I would then request the members to introduce themselves.
Chairman Akamuka, he is up on the Freddy Mamburu, the committee of selection.
Good morning everybody, I'm an attractive member of the committee.
Hi everybody, I'm Tandim from Losupukwana, representing the Western Cape.
Sanbona, to say good morning. Sanbona. My name is Kathy Lamini, member of the committee representing Mala.
Good morning, I'm Norman Kulo, representing the Northwest Province and a member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Jeremy Thomas, Chief Financial Officer of Lucy.
Morning, my name is Mafura Kometi, Chief Executive Officer.
Good morning, my name is John Romick. I am the chairperson of the Council of Umalusi.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eugenie Rao. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Umalusi.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable members. I'm Teddy Benachi, Acting DG, Basic Education.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable members. I'm Vivian Barossa. I'm the DG, Officer of the DG.
Good morning. My name is Tabelo Tabani. I'm from the Office of Strategic Planning and Reporting, DBE.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nzita Mulerekwa. I'm the CFO of DBE.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Matanzi Makaweli, Acting DDG for Curriculum from Department of Basic Education.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and Colleagues. My name is Karma Kojana. I'm the DDG responsible for Teachers and Professional Development.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Palifa Chobeka. I'm DDG for District Coordination Support and Development.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Antos Kuman. I'm DDG Administration in the Department.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Lewin Mada. I'm the liaison in the Office of the Director General.
Zuyanda Zanga, Secretary to the Committee.
Good morning, members, and the Department Linda Stokely. My name is the Secretary of the Committee.
My very warm greetings to everyone. My name is Tabang Teto. I call advisor for the Select Committee on Education and Recreation.
Good morning. I'm Kabila K. Jekon, Advisor for Social Services.
Good morning. Khalid Gwebo from Community Selection.
Hey, good morning, everyone. My name is Ikhan Stock. I'm a member of the committee. Thanks.
Somebody did not introduce. Sir? Yes.
Stephanie and I do for PMG.
I would request those that are coming in to introduce themselves.
I'm Randall Pandanifa, the PLO Minister and Chief Chair.
This is some way of push back for you.
We are through with the introductions. Let me take this opportunity to welcome Omarusi and DBE. We have had engagement with DBE before on a number of occasions, but we have not really had an opportunity as this select committee to meet with Omarusi. We regard Omarusi as a very important entity of the Department of Education because they are playing a very critical role in ensuring that we deliver quality education to the nation. They are one of the policy councils that have got a very important mandate of ensuring that they develop, they maintain, and they force integrity and transparency in issues relating to the achievement of the learning and teaching. I am going to give them an opportunity to do the presentation first, hoping that they are going to use the time and cover every issue that they need to cover within the specified time. We would have been much more comfortable to engage them for much longer. Mm-hmm. But because there is a department as well that has to come on board with the presentation, we are going to limit entity to only 45 minutes as indicated. Secretary, I don't know if there are any formal positions I can proceed.
We've got a note here that the Deputy Minister of the Joint Committee. The apology also for the Minister who is not able to attend. The Deputy Minister will be here presenting the Minister.
Thank you. Let us send over to Omarusi to give us the presentation. We are aware of the amount of work that you have done for the nation. Quite aware of your achievements, the institutions that have been able to register. We are aware of the fact that you have actually gone into a bid to host one of the very important conferences in 2016, and the report that you have is that you have actually won the bid. We want to congratulate you for that. Omarusi has been successful in fulfilling the commitment to maintain the standards of education, for further education and training in our country. You also have been able to develop RAIL to assist those with a limitation in terms of not being visually able. And some of the issues that maybe you'd like to hear as you do your presentation are the following. What plans do you have in place to ensure that we care for the tendency by the private institutions or some of the private institutions to issue certificates that are fraudulent? Are there any mechanisms in place to try to deal with that kind of situation? The use of consultants to perform some of the duties. How much is it, or how is it impacting on the budget of the entity? what mechanisms are in place, for instance, to ensure that even the assessment of the under results are agreeable, that is, if you'd be responsible for that. The assessment, yeah, of the, yes, the under assessment. And then also what mechanisms are there to assist the different colleges not to deal with some of the subjects that they would initially want to offer. Because that sort of disorganizes the learners and the parents if along the way they begin to deal with some of the subjects. Is there a mechanism by Amanuzi to address this kind of challenge? According to the report also, you say that one of the staff that is very dedicated, we really do appreciate that. Is that meant to say that the staff is happy with the EDT? Is the staff satisfied with the environment, with the conditions that they're in? And maybe some of the issues then will come as questions. But those are the issues and the audit outcomes of NDC. How can you say it during the audit? Some of the issues then would come out as we progress, because we're going to have question time in any case. And maybe lastly, just explain to me what is meant by the future of rural education. What is rural education? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Ms. Wani, and Honorable Members. So, as I said, my name is John von Rinken. Before the CEO presents, if you allow me just to say a few words by way of introduction. I think I should introduce myself as someone that have only been Chairperson since June this year, 2014. However, in a sense, I'm a stranger to Malusi because I had a four-year stint between mid-2006 and mid-2010 when I indeed was the chairperson of the Malusi Council. So I've been reappointed by the minister now. I would like to just point out that the Malusi in its current form was established in 2002 through the promulgation of the General and Further Education and Training Act in Fetwa of 2001. It's amended in 2008. Umar Lucy took over from what was previously known as SASRID. It is SASRID with an expanded mandate. The council consists of 19 members, 15 of which are independent professionals who are appointed for their expertise in education. The others, these other four, are the CEOs of Umalusi, of SACWA, of the Council on Higher Education, the CHE, and of the QCTO, Quality Council on Trades and Occupations. The CEOs of those four bodies serve on the council as well. All are appointed by the Honourable Minister of Basic Education. Umalusi's main job is to improve quality assure education, as you pointed out, the Honourable Chairperson, in schools, but also in adult education centres and technical and vocational education and training colleges, TVET colleges, which are previously known as FT colleges. Needless to say, as in the Honourable Chairperson, he pointed out, quality assurance is important for the health of the entire South African education system. And therefore, we do take our task very seriously. We understand the import it has on the health of the system. So I just want to make, in closing, three comments about the status of the policy. Firstly, it's independence. The independence of Umalusi gives credence to the system. I think that's an important thing to say. We can always expand on that. Secondly, we say with pride that Mercy, since its inception in 2002, obtained unqualified orders each and every year. This is a track record that we diligently guard and will continue to pursue. So, Honourable Chairperson, it's now my pleasure to ask the CEO and his team to now present the achievements of Mercy in the 2013-2014 financial year, and they will summarize the current issues, around some of which you've already highlighted for us. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Professor Holming, Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee in Meswani, and Honorable Members. We are grateful for the opportunity to present the Umazisi Annual Report for 2013-2014. We are going to respond to the issues that the Honorable Chairperson has raised, and I will do so at the end of our presentation, as some of the issues are going to be touched upon as we're doing our presentation. So I'll just recap on some that would have been touched on in the presentation. The presentation is going to look at the following. The purpose and mandate of Mercy summarized, the external environment and how it impacts on Mercy. We are then going to look at the organizational performance per unit, and this will be done by the Chief Operating Officer. And then we'll hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to give financial information. And then I'll come back to current issue and way forward and then the conclusion. Now, in terms of Umalusi's mandate is determined by two acts, namely the National Qualification Framework Act of 2008 and the General Research Education and Training Quality Assurance Act of 2001, which was amended in 2008 in line with the National Qualification Framework Act of 2008. The amendments are accommodating the National Qualification Framework. Now, we develop and manage a sub-framework, I want to emphasize sub-framework of qualifications in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority and the other two quality councils supported by the necessary quality assurance policies and processes. I emphasized sub because the South African National Qualifications Framework has three sub-frameworks. The General and Further Education and Training Sub-Framework of Mercy, the Occupational Qualification Sub-Framework of the Quality Council for Training and Occupation, and the Education Qualification Sub-Framework of the Council on Higher Education. So we occupy airspace in the National Qualifications Framework. We also do quality assurance, and we do quality assurance of provisioning, through the accreditation of private providers of education and training and assessment, and we also monitor the public system. We also do quality assurance of assessment at exit points and we certify then achievement. We don't do quality assurance of assessment with internal examinations. We only do it according to the exit points, and we thereafter, we put learners that have achieved air qualification, we treat them with certificates. According to the GENTESCO Act and the NCF Act, we have to maintain a database of learner achievements and related measures and submit such data in a format determined in consultation with the South African Education Framework for recording on the National Learners Records Database so that all those qualifications of learners in Mercy should be on the NLRD, National Learners Records Database, that is kept by the South African Qualifications Authority. The Act also allows us to commission and publish research related to the development and implementation of the SAR framework and qualifications. The Act also formalizes our relationship with the Ministry in that it allows us to give advice to the relevant Minister on matters relating to our SAR framework of qualifications. It could be the Minister of Higher Education and Training or the Minister of Basic Education. It also says we should collaborate with the South African Qualifications Authority and other city councils in terms of the National Qualifications Framework. We have to do advocacy of the SAR framework and its qualifications so that the South African public can know the qualifications that we offer and what they mean in terms of the NCF levels. We operate in an environment that impacts on the work of Mercy. the National Education Framework Act of 2008 introduces changes in the role of disabilities of various bodies in the qualification landscape, and this has impacted on the work of Umarusi. Subsequent amendment of the various acts that govern the work of the QC has required more capacity in a review of Umarusi's position and approaches. So that initially, just to cite an example, SARCOA has a standard setting role. That role with the promulgation of the National Qualification Framework has now been given to the different QCs. That has meant that they have to review how we work and capacitate the organization accordingly. And this we have done successfully. The differing model and views on the nature of standard setting and quality assurance, which comes as a result of the changes, the amendments that were introduced to the GENSEDCO Act. In 2011, the presidency came with the National Development Plan, which highlights education and training priorities that must be addressed in planning. And this we take into account in whatever we do at Umarusi and when we do our strategic planning. The process of collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority and with the other quality councils in the transition to the NQF Act has meant that staff have been extensively involved in both ministerial and SARCOA task teams, so that whenever there is a new development that has been influenced by the NQF Act, between the seed organizations, including the department, that the staff of Umarusi would participate in those task teams. The finalization of the NQF in December 2012 meant that the staff framework of Umarusi and other staff frameworks had to be gazetted, and that was done. It had to be gazetted according to the National Qualifications Framework. That has been done. At the beginning of this year, the Ministry of Higher Education and Training launched the white paper on post-school education, and this has influenced the operations of Umarusi. So we have taken into account the vision of the Minister of Education and Training on post-school system. The Department of Higher Education and Training has created changes in terms of relating to the colleges, but there seems to be some challenges that result in validation in terms of the qualifications such as the NCC, National Certificate Vocational. Now, the minister has appointed a task team, and the report has been finalized, and that task team has proposed some changes to the National Certificate Vocational, and we are looking at those recommendations. There are continued debates also on the location of the related programs, the N1s to N3 programs, as to whether they have to be with Umarusi or they have to be with the Quality Council of Chamber of Occupation. This matter remains unresolved. But as things stand, the N1s remain with Umarusi. The Department of Basic Education is implementing the Curriculum and Assessment Policy Statement, and Umarusi is currently analyzing the changes made to the curricula and the standards of assessment, and we are advising the department on our observations as a quality assurance body. We are in continuous communication with the department on the CAPS. The fate of adult girls remains uncertain, as a decision has been taken to extend the senior certificate. The decision may affect planning for the rollout of the NASCA. The NASCA is the National Senior Certificate for Adults, tailor-made specifically for adults. So, with the extension of the existence of the senior certificate, which was supposed to have stopped in June of this year, has some implications for the NASCA, because we record now two qualifications in the same phase for others, senior certificate and NASCA. Now, the quality assurance regime that we follow in maintaining standards and quality assurance, it has a combination of a number of interventions. We follow three approaches, a model that has three approaches. The first one is the intended curriculum, second being the examined curriculum, and the third being the assessed curriculum. I'm going to briefly comment on the three approaches: intended, examined, and assessed curriculum. The intended curriculum comes with the evaluation and benchmark of existing qualifications and curricula. The curriculum that we intend to present. And tied to this is the issuing of authentic certificates and development of new qualifications and curricula, intended curricula. It's not been implemented yet. It's when we have not even implemented the qualification, still intend, and we're looking at the format that we want to have in the curricula qualifications. So we also look at the examined curriculum, ensuring external moderation processes that we follow in terms of the assessment at entry points are of the acceptable standards, and that examinations are conducted in a credible manner through verifying the national and provincial monitoring systems. That is the examined curriculum. That is what we are doing currently with the National Senior Certificates, and that is in the main what we are known for in the system. And then we ensure that standardization processes are reliable, consistent, and standardization decisions are passed during resulting. With regards to the implemented curriculum, it is the curriculum that is being implemented in the institutions. We have intended, we have implemented, and then we assess. With the implemented curriculum, we're talking about where we evaluate and accredit institutions of learning. And those are the independent schools, independent other education and training centers, and independent TVET colleges, elite colleges. So that is where curriculum is being implemented. It's being enacted, being implemented. Now, with the examined curriculum or assessed curriculum, we ensure that standardization processes are reliable, that they are consistent, and that standardization decisions are held during resulting. We do the accreditation of private institutions, schools, education colleges, and other centers to offer the qualification that we certify. That is the implemented curriculum, the enacted curriculum that I mentioned earlier on. We accredit third assessment bodies to offer and assess qualifications, certify the monitors. Currently, we've got three assessment bodies that are created by Umalusi. In fact, we've got two public assessment bodies, being the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Higher Education and Training. Those two are deemed accredited by virtue of them being public institutions. And then we've got three private ones, and old and established one, which is the Independent Examination Board, IEB. The new kid on the block, Sakai, South African Comprehensive Assessment Institute. That will be quality assuring the NSC for the first time this year. And Benchmark, that's still going through our accreditation processes. Those are the three independent ones. I'm handing over to Mayor General to look at different units. Thank you, Chair. With your permission.
Thank you, Mayor. This is what we call national operations. This is really the units are divided functionally and collectively address the mandate. So the first unit within MLEC that I'm going to report on is the unit called the Qualifications, Curriculum and Certification Unit, QCC. The role of this unit is to ensure and enhance the status and quality of the qualifications that MLEC certifies. And so they quality assure qualifications, curricula, and in addition, issue the certificates for the qualifications that the MLEC has within its scope. It also carries out a verification function, so if people want to verify the authenticity of a matric certificate, they can do it through that unit. The qualifications referred to here specifically are currently the senior certificate, which has been extended, the national senior certificate, the national technical certificate, which is the N3, the National Certificate Vocational Levels 2, 3 and 4, the General Education and Training Certificates for Adults. Those are the existing certificates that we issue through this unit. More specifically on the work of this unit, the following. In 2013, the General and Further Education and Training Qualification Sub-Framework of Qualifications was gazetted by FACWA in August 2013. The National Senior Certificate for Adults, which was custom-made for adult learners, was registered on the National Qualification Framework in December of last year. and the Department of Higher Education and Training has been busy developing the curriculum for that qualification. The revision of the GEPC was, as it has been done, and this has been put up for public comment during that time. And it's quite a lot of policy development around our sub-framework about how to manage it and about how the quality assurance would be enacted and so on. There's a committee of council for qualification standards committee, and this particular unit took care of the secretariat of that committee, which oversees the work done by this particular unit within MLEC. I think the slide therefore speaks to itself for the rest. In terms of curriculum and evaluation, MLEC has been on an extensive evaluation of the CAPS curriculum in all phases. It completed the, it began the FET phase in 2013 and completed it now in June of 2014, in which 15 FET subjects or CAP subjects at matric level were evaluated, compared to the national curriculum statement from before, and also an international benchmark was done. There's a longitudinal study underway, which then includes all the phases at schooling, and we look at how these phases are progressed one into the other and whether that's done appropriately, and that report will become available next year. In terms of certification, of course, we've maintained our certification systems for all the various qualifications, and in 2013-14, we issued more than 1 million certificates. The verifications undertaken during that time were almost 275,000 verifications, which actually is quite a substantial income stream for MLEC, perhaps, just to mention. So that's the first unit. The second unit is the Quality Assurance Assessment Unit, which is really the unit that takes care of the examinations and standards of question papers and so on. And it establishes and maintains and improves standards of an assessment at exit points. So this would be where the final exam is written. It does it through the following five key processes. External moderation of question papers, at which experts look at the standards of each question paper. Verification and monitoring, the conduct of examinations. Perhaps I can just explain that there's actually three levels of monitoring of the examinations. Provincial departments monitor, the national department has a national monitoring plan, and MLEC is a third level of monitoring. So our monitoring is a fairly small sample because, you know, given the existing other systems. The external moderation of marking, we not only moderate the marking process, but we actually moderate a sample of scripts to ensure that the standard is correct. The external moderation of continuous assessment, that is the assessment that takes place in the schools and colleges. And then, of course, the standardization of assessment results, which happens after pretty much every exam during the year, and we actually standardize 11 different exams during the year. But the most important one, and the one with the most sort of energy around it, is the one at the end of the year for the National Senior Certificate. Just to give you some statistics, in 2013 for the National Senior Certificate, we externally moderated 355 question papers that would include the Department of Basic Education and the Unintended Examination Board. And we also moderated 26 trial question papers for South African Comprehensive Assessment Institutes. I think Dr. Akhamisi mentioned this is a new private assessment body. Last year, in 2013, we only allowed them to run a trial exam because we wanted to see whether they could in fact do a national exam. Now, this year is the first time that they will be examining the National Senior Certificate formally. They address primarily the homeschooling and distance education sector of learners at that time. In adult basic education, we looked at 86 question papers, and the National Certificate NCV, we looked at 264, and also 88 question papers for in-courses engineering. And with the Senior Certificate, we looked at 77 question papers. In terms of moderation of marking, I think the slide speaks for itself. It gives the number of subjects that was moderated in terms of the marking in each of those areas, and a sample for each of the subjects taken up for each of the qualifications. In terms of internal assessment, and this is the site-based assessment, we do it in phases because we look at the tasks that are set in the various provinces and various assessment bodies throughout the year. So we look at the standard of the tasks in the number of subjects in each case, and then we also look at learner portfolios to ensure there's a level of authenticity in terms of the actual assessment. In terms of ADIT, we looked at 26 learning areas and the NCV 32 learning areas. I mean, again, it's just very fine monitoring the conduct of the dams. You can see various numbers of sites, and the NSC for 2013 we looked at 333 sites, which really just means officials go around to make sure that the dams are running, you know, efficiently and so on. But as I said, this is a third layer of monitoring because the sample is very small in each of those cases. Then the monitoring of the marking of exams, again, for the certificate, 99 sites and 27 marking centres. For the NSC, 294 sites, 40 for the IED and 36 for the CLI. For average, 112 sites and for the NCD, 67 sites. In terms of standardisation, well, those are the assessment outcomes that are standardised. Of course, as I said previously, we standardise 11 different examinations throughout the year. The third unit is the Evaluation and Accreditation Unit. This unit is responsible for accrediting private institutions and through quality assurance of their provision for the qualifications for which we certify. So it's tied in with our qualifications. Only those that offer our qualifications are accredited by us. The unit evaluates the capacity of education training providers to implement registered qualifications and approved curricula. Now that would include private independent schools, private FED colleges and private adult learning centres. It also looks at the quality of the enacted curriculum and providers that is teaching and learning at the required standard. We have more recently in the last year, although I'm reporting on 2013 and 2014, we appointed a team of full-time evaluators who are subject experts who actually go in and do these site visits for us. The capacity, and we also look at the capacity of assessment bodies to conduct practical internal and external assessments of learner achievement at the required standards. So that would include the IEB, for instance, the Sakai, and then there's one or two others that have applied as well, which are now in the process. Just some statistics around that. In the independent schools, we had a new accreditation process that rolled out this year and began in the latter part of 2013. There were 491 provisionally accredited schools that were granted full accreditation at that point. 118 were granted one-year provisional accreditation and 572 new applications were received in 2013. 2014 has kind of tripled, which is actually quite astounding, but yes. And FET colleges, the new accreditation process opened in September of last year and the 312 applications received, 241 were accepted, 71 rejected. In terms of registration of the Department of Education, 265 providers were referred for registration to the Department of Higher Education and Training. In terms of adult centres, which were private, this also began in September of last year, 91 applications were submitted, 82 were accepted. In terms of institutional site visits, perhaps I can just say that during 2013 we did not do any institutional site visits because our I can just perhaps give you a little bit of a history. We began accrediting providers in 2004, but at that stage our accreditation criteria had not been regulated by the minister, and so we only provisionally accredited providers. The minister approved the accreditation policy in 2012, late 2012. So in 2013 we began to move to a point of transition and just trying to manage the different cohorts, appointing people to do the final full accreditation process, which has now been rolled out. But in that period, we did not visit any sites. We were just trying to organize the system in a way that it could roll out for 2014. The evaluation and accreditation of assessment bodies, the examination, the independent examination board was monitored, was monitored for its monitored to make sure it continues to meet the accreditation criteria for the National Senior Certificate, and we're provisionally accredited to offer the GTC, which for adults. So CLI was monitored, making sure that it was meeting all its commitments because it was doing CLI exam and we wanted to see that it could perform. And we received one application from another assessment body, which is now in the process. My final slide is around the research unit. Previously, research was not a formal mandate of the Maluhis, but since 2008, the Mentorship Act has become a formal mandate. And this particular unit researches matters around the National Qualifications Framework, or our qualifications in particular, or any educational issues that might be identified, and obviously also informs our strategic planning. There is a quick list of some of the research reports that were put out in that period, and if there's any of those you're interested in, we can email that to you.
that is the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, COO, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Deputy Minister, and colleagues from the Department of Basic Education. I will continue the presentation and dealing with the governance and office of the CEO. Now, the acronym there, Go CEO, does not mean more than what it says there. It's just an acronym. It's not for our CEO to go anywhere. It's for him to stay where he is. And this unit ensures that the strategic and annual performance plans and budgets are in place annually, and that the organization carries out its remit and its mandate according to the GenFedCo Act. And all the governing acts around corporate governance, like in the King 3 report, and that Umalusi's work is advocated through the communications and PR strategy, and that our stakeholder relationships are both managed, maintained, and improved on a continuous basis. In terms of the detail around that, as you may be fully aware, organizationally we have to meet certain deadlines in terms of the National Treasury and departmental deadlines in terms of our strategic plans and budgets, which we've done adequately well in the last financial year. In terms of organizational governance, we've conducted all the council and board meetings and its supporting committees, having inducted and orientated the new council on the 4th of June of this year. We also implement our communication strategy as per the plan approved by the council, and we establish relationships and maintain these with political structures, the Department of Basic Education, Department of Higher Education, other statutory bodies, and the quality assurance bodies like the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations and Council for Higher Education and Training. In terms of information technology infrastructure and systems, I'm sure we're all aware how important this aspect of our work has become, and there's some detail in terms of all the hardware that we've had to acquire over the past financial year, and the kind of service level agreements that we had to implement to ensure that this network that supports the work that Umalusi does professionally is done in time. So as you can see there, we have 59 personal computers, 23 servers, and 58 laptops and so forth. We have software licensing for around 23 different software licenses, and they range from Acrobat, ASP.NET, AssetPro, Developer, e-application, Microsoft, SQL, Paxful, the accounting, VIP, and so forth and so on. And these are all just some of the software packages that we need to keep in place. In terms of business continuity, we have a disaster recovery plan in place, and implemented a virtual private network through the State Information Technology Agency. In terms of the management information system, I need not tell anyone in this room that your management information system becomes the backbone of the organization in terms of your administration, and unfortunately it's one of those animals that continues to grow over time. You start with a very, very small scope and you end up with scope creep, and the project becomes bigger and bigger as you want to manipulate and obtain more reports from your information system. So this is an ongoing project for us, and we finally seem to be able to source the right kind of people internally to develop the management information system, maintain our website, as well as we have an online accreditation system for private providers that we've implemented. In terms of the mainframes, our mainframe runs the certification system on which we validate all the certification and qualifications for senior certificate, N3, national certificate vocational, the NSC and the GETC. We've also submitted all the relevant learner achievement data to the South African Qualifications Authority for the NLRG for the years 1992 to 2012. We are currently busy with the transferring of the data for 2013.
And once their system is able to accommodate the 2013 data, then in terms of the data that we have and kind of own, we would have satisfied that requirement in terms of the N2F Act. We also support verification of qualifications, and as the CEO has indicated, it's quite a substantial amount of money that as it's an income stream for UMLUSI as employers verify the matric qualification of their employees and pay UMLUSI a fee. The quality assurance systems are then also on our mainframe, and we successfully support the examination resulting processes of standardization and statistical moderation as and when it is required. Now coming to the corporate, the other part of corporate services, the finances, the human resource development and administrative support. In terms of finance, supply chain management and asset management, as you are aware, UMLUSI obtained a clean audit in the past financial year, and we continue to pursue that with every fiber of our being. Our creditors are paid within 30 days. Any surpluses that are made are invested with the corporation for public deposits as per the National Treasury requirements, and at the end of the financial year, UMLUSI had in its surplus account 46.7 million as per the annual report, and that was reserved for the following. There were accruals at the end of the financial year of 10.3 million. Those are credits that needed to be paid. There's renovations to the building that was purchased next door to UMLUSI for the expansion of our work to the tune of 10 million. The 2014-15 financial year required an injection of 10.8 million, which was reserved in our reserves, and then the remaining 15 million was set aside for possible litigation and other requirements, because as a public entity, I think it is critical that we have some level of reserve in the event of any emergency.
Or our if you could summarize us the details we are through with UMLUSI by 11.
Good.
The behavior.
Yes. Thank you. All assets are registered in terms of human resource management and development. Development of our staff is a priority for UMLUSI, and we had a vacancy rate of 12%, which was due to the fact the council had approved the filling of posts over a 2-year financial period, and we had a turnover rate of 6%. Now, when one looks at that turnover rate, it is quite small compared to the turnover rates elsewhere, and I could speak to that if I had time. In terms of financial performance, UMLUSI's total revenue for that financial year was 121 million, and expenditure was 101 million, leaving a surplus of 19.6 million. And that surplus was due to the fact that there were increased accreditation applications, which were totally unexpected, as the COO indicated on slide 81. The private equity college fee collections increased, as well as the fact that we had some reserves, and those reserves attracted an interest rate that was favorable, and there was reduced expenditure based on the fact that we had to fill posts over 2 financial years, and therefore there was a carryover from last financial year to this financial year. In terms of the organization's financial position, our total assets of 88.5 million, and our equity and liabilities, as you see, balanced, and I think we were in a very favorable position last year. Go to a very important slide here, is the 3-year forecast going forward. For this financial year, 2014-15, we have a total budget of 134 million, of which 107 million is the grant that we've received, that we are receiving from through the Department of Basic Education for France, and we are able to carry the shortfall from our reserves of 10.8 million. But going forward, you will see there is a shortfall for 2015-16, 16-17, and 17-18. Looking at the national economic outlook going forward, UMLUSI understands and accepts that we are going to have to go back to the drawing board to see where we can cut our expenditure. However, I think it is critical for this committee and all and Parliament to realize that quality assurance work is a very critical function to the not only the Education Sector, but as far as the priorities of the NDP are concerned. And if one needs to approach any kind of curtailment and cutting with caution. As far as the percentage grant, this slide is just an indicator to show how the grant over the years has increased, but going from year 2015-16 forward, you will find the grant percentage reduces. And the request is always, let's see to what extent the grant would at least cover around 80% of the total budget of Umalusi to ensure that Umalusi is able to do the things that it is supposed to do. Chair, with that I will hand over to CEO Dr. Akumese.
Chair, I will try to conclude at 11. In terms of the current issues and the way forward, the implementation of our framework of qualification is very important as we move forward. The development of new qualification and the implications for quality assurance processes. We go about doing curricular development and the different interpretations of mandate there in terms of who has to do what in terms of the development of new qualifications. We have to look also at the whole question of standard setting, whether to follow the non-referenced approach or the criterion referenced approach, which uses the identical theory. Currently, the question papers that our learners write in South Africa are not field tested. The questions are not field tested. They are set by the examiner, moderated by the internal moderator of the different assessment bodies, and then the external moderators of Umalusi. In some instances, the mistakes are only detected once an examination has been written. Now, with IRT, it means that we have an item bank with the questions properly calibrated to suit a particular level of cognitive demand, so that the questions will be predictable and we'll be able to say this question can create these problems for these learners because it has been tested and calibrated. But at the same time, sometimes we identify the problems once a paper has been written. So maybe IRT is something that we have to explore. We are busy rolling out the new accreditation process, and we are doing that with success whilst this has been recently gathered by Honorable Minister of Basic Education. As the CFO has indicated, we are looking at the budget requirements in the years going forward in terms of the grant that we get from the department. I will not elaborate on that. I think we have said the mouthful. Chairperson, I need to admit that we are going to invite the members of the Select Committee to the IAEA conference that will be hosting 2016, the International Association on Educational Assessment Conference that is going to be hosted in Cape Town by Umalusi. Maybe getting back to the question that the Honourable Chairperson raised early on, in terms of dealing with the tendency of fraudulent certificates, the certificates that Umalusi issue have security features which cannot be duplicated by anybody who is using a photocopy or any amateurish approaches. For instance, just to highlight a few security features that we have on our certificate. When you hold an authentic Umalusi certificate against the sun, you see Umalusi in the background of the paper. The old paper used to have Kelson. They've still changed to Umalusi, so that no photocopier can duplicate that. If you take a magnifying glass and you look at the borders of the certificate, it continuously says Umalusi, Umalusi, Umalusi. When you only use the magnifying glass, without a magnifying glass, you are not able to see that. That cannot be duplicated by anybody who's operating, through backyard means. And also, if you look at the serial number, it has the red ink which protrudes to the back of the paper in a bloated manner. That cannot be duplicated on a photocopier. I need to admit, Chair, that we continue to look at the additional security features because as these fraudsters look at how they can cheat and beat the system, we also have to be vigilant in terms of new network. And my mitigation unit is continuously looking at this. Chairperson, the use of consultants, strictly speaking, UMAD does not use consultants. And that money had to be spent to treasury several times, and even with the cost containment measures that were introduced last year. That the people that we use who are outside are not consultants. They are professionals who do work for us seasonally. Seasonally in that we have to do external moderation of question papers. And it is a one-off kind of work. And they can't keep staff permanently through that kind of work at UMAD. It should be a full-time expenditure because it's one-off in a year. There are people that we employ, and when we need evaluators for the evaluation and accreditation of independent schools, independent equity colleges, and so forth and so on, it runs off. So that might have been taken to treasury, and we have a common understanding of treasury, what that means, and how that is saving costs as far as we are concerned, instead of us keeping permanent people idle throughout the year when there is no work for them to do. With regards to ANA, we are currently not involved. With the arrival of the new council under the chairpersonship of Professor Volman, in this first meeting in August, we got an assignment as the management to explore ways in which UMAD could be involved in the quality assurance of the ANA. In the quarterly meeting that we hold with senior officials of the Department of Basic Education, that name has been tabled, and we have established a task team which is going to look at the recommendations that will be taken to Municipal Council, so that there's to be agreement. Now, a preliminary report is going to be submitted in the November Council meeting. Between UMAD and the department, we have established a task team, our senior officials will look at what has to be recommended to Council. I need to submit, though, that the report that will be submitted in the November Council meeting will be a preliminary report. I will be looking at the different steps that have to be followed if we have to actually be involved finally, if at all. Chairperson, the teacher colleges who they register subjects are really inconvenient learners, but I need to submit that the teacher colleges that are public institutions are not accredited by UMAD, they are inter-accredited because they are public institutions. But those that we accredit, we only accredit them to offer programs that are on our sub-framework of qualifications and not any other. So that we give them a license to offer NCV and M courses and, you know, the programs that are meant for TVET colleges or NCV colleges. Anything outside that, we don't accredit them to do that. And we ensure that when they are committed to offer any program, they do that. Otherwise, they don't be accredited if they don't meet the needs of the community as they would have committed. Chairperson, I want to submit that the start of UMAD is happy, and that can be seen with the turnover rate of staff in terms of resignations. We conducted a culture survey at UMAD that looked at a number of elements. I will not remember them off the cuff, but I'll just try and mention some of them. We looked at job satisfaction. We looked at the issues of retention, how they see their fear in the organization, in terms of their growth and development. We looked at how they view leadership, the leadership of the organization, how they view the vision of the organization, whether there is visionary leadership. We checked whether they are happy with the tools that we provide for them to do their work. And we got feedback from an independent summit that we conducted. And 2 weeks ago on a Friday, we gave feedback to all the staff members to say, this is what we have seen. Are there further inputs that we are going to make? And we're going to build all that in our strategic planning so that we take care of our staff adequately. I've not seen in my 30 years experience as a worker in an organization that does a culture study in the manner in which you must have done. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the future of rural education, I just want to say maybe this question has to go to the Department of Basic Education, but maybe just a comment that we've got a partnership with the University of West Bank Fund and the CP, the Center for Education and Policy Development. And we held a seminar on rural education. And one of the things that we looked at was the quality of teachers attracted to rural schools. And we are happy that the department is giving incentives to teachers to go to rural schools. And also, we observed during that seminar that the West University, as part of their training of student teachers, they expect them to do some work in the rural areas before they qualify. That is commendable. So I'll leave it at that, Chair, and maybe ask the department to respond with a permission. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much for the presentation by Omar Lucy, because he's in clarity by a lot of issues that we did not quite understand previously. You are free to remain as a department. That's the presentation, because the questions will come at the end. Let us welcome Minister, Deputy Minister Suti. We are very pleased to have you in our midst today. Maybe before the acting DG takes over, we would request you, DM, to implement. That's 2 minutes for this.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, given the enormous, well, the huge presentation that has to follow. I'm going to be very, very brief. Firstly, Honorable Chairperson, let me convey the apologies of the Minister, who is presently in Cabinet and is unable to attend. She would have wanted to be with the team. I'd like to also acknowledge the presence of Professor Coleman, Dr. Panetsky, Ms. Rabi, and Mr. Thomas. Thank you very much. Good to see you here as well. And thank you for staying for the presentation. The Umalusi has made us proud over the years because of the quality of the work and certainly the commitment to quality education. And I'm quite delighted to be doing that part of the presentation. Honourable Chairperson, I'm going to be extremely brief to say that perhaps to start off by thanking the Acting Director General for really doing his best under very difficult circumstances and holding the fort together, and we thank him for doing so last year and during the course of this year. And to the entire senior management team, I left them before in the last administration, and they are still with us in the new administration. They continue smiling and working extremely hard, so we'll be very, very grateful for the wonderful capacity that we have and also the commitment of our senior managers who are present out here, and I do believe they have been introduced. Honourable members, I always regard myself as part of the NCOP, having been its chief whip for 5 years, yesteryear, and I'm always proud to be here. Chairperson, you know, quite interesting, on Thursday when I was at the NCOP, making a statement on behalf of the minister, one of the members of the NCOP spoke about Reginald Tambo. He, as an educator, person with majors in mathematics and physics, and his enormous contribution not only to the liberation of our country, but also to the teaching profession. He taught 5 years at St. Peter's after he acquired his PhD degree, and he was unable to complete his higher education degree because for political reasons they did not permit him, in fact, expelled him from the institution because of his political views. It's important to remember that because this month is indeed dedicated, the previous month has been dedicated to his contribution, and I think we are indeed grateful to have been led by not only an educator but a very astute political leader. But in that context, one has to reflect about very briefly about our journey, and I'm going to do so in just the next minute, Honourable Chairperson. Firstly, that it's only 20 years since the achievement of our democracy, and within 20 years we have now at least a very settled system of education. We have one curriculum, we have one examination that is in throughout the country. It is quality assured. I think our systems are in place to ensure the integrity of our question, our examination system is not compromised in any way. And indeed, while challenges do arise, we do our utmost to ensure that we deal with it very, very diligently. Secondly, we've been very honest about our challenges in terms of literacy and numeracy. In the past 3 years, we've been able to distribute more than 150 million books from the R to grade 9 to enhance literacy and numeracy. That's to every child in the system of education, black and white, until 1 to 5, free of charge. We also take pleasure, certainly celebrate the fact that we are able to distribute, we have been distributing mathematics and science textbooks from grade 10 to 12 to all our learners, as well as for grades 4, 5, and 6, and indeed we've completed the segment for math, science, and technology in grade 7, 8, and 9, and there are approximately 94 titles that are digitized, and we're making quite a few of them internet, preparing ourselves for ICT. We can take note of the fact that, and it's certainly been a huge challenge to manage a huge task such as the annual initial assessment, where we test more than 7 million learners.
We do so because we want to see whether there's progress or regression in terms of the performance and achievement, and whether they are indeed moving, the system is moving forward in the right way, and how we can indeed make the appropriate interventions. And indeed, we do welcome the suggestion by Uma Lucy that they too would have a role in terms of ensuring that the quality of the assessments or the tests that we provide are of a standard that is with the appropriate cognitive demand, and certainly we would collaborate with Uma Lucy in this regard. During the course of last year, the Honourable Members would perhaps remember I indicated that we would be delivering a school a week, state-of-the-art school with ICT laboratories and all other facilities and amenities. Since that time there, we've already reached 82 schools that have been delivered. Just in the Western Cape, for example, we've already delivered 6. In the Eastern Cape, more than 72. So that's huge progress. The challenges are still huge. Overall, Chairperson, we are moving forward in the right direction. We certainly have not achieved the excellence that we seek to achieve, but we have moved away from mediocrity. That is indicative in the levels of achievement in our annual national assessments, as well as our national senior certificate examinations. And we do hope that the learners perform better this year than they have indeed last year. So there is a stability. There is an acceptance, and I think all sectors have embraced the National Curriculum Assessment Policy Statement, and that's very, very important. There is a move towards centralization of procurement, which enables us to be able to deliver a textbook per child per grade per subject, and that's a step in the right direction. I think our single biggest challenge is certainly to ensure that we do not take our foot off the pedal with regard to quality. That to me would be the single biggest challenge that we face, and therefore Uma Lucy has a particularly important role to play in that regard, to ensure that our quality standards are not declining in any way, indeed that the cognitive demand increases year by year in a very, very sensible and rational way. So that being the case, Honourable Chairperson, I'm going to invite the Acting Director General will be with us, and he's asked to be released, and I do so through you, Honourable Chairperson Zwane, to say that he has met with the Minister on a very important issue in Belt City. With your permission, if you could ask him to leave at that time, we would ask Ms. Carlson to introduce or make the presentation, followed by the CFO, Ms. Mteza Molalekwa. From the Department of Basic Education. We have the senior managers all present out here, so when there is an interaction, they would certainly respond to the affected areas that are raised. So thank you for the opportunity. I'm sorry, I've been a little longer than the 5 minutes that you've given me.
No, thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for the input that you have made. It is quite an important input. And as this committee, we are quite aware and we do really appreciate the effort of the Department of Basic Education. We are well aware also of your achievements, in spite of the financial constraints that you are facing as a country. You have done very well in some specific areas. However, we do get worried, for instance, when we read through your report to note that there are areas where there has been quite a lot of underspending. And I suppose that the department will be looking into those areas. I know that there will be factors that would lead to the department underspending in certain areas, but then the department needs to look into that. I suppose because we are representing provinces here, that the presentation is going to be formatted such that certain aspects of it would actually reflect performance at the level of provinces. Because our major interest as the National Council of Provinces is the performance by the National Department of Basic Education, but also with focused attention on provinces. Rolling out under 7 million learners is not an issue. We really do appreciate this, the gaps and the introduction of CAPS in some of the technical high schools is highly appreciated. We really do appreciate also that the Minister has actually put together a task team to investigate performance in particular maths and science and technology. That is highly appreciated. However, as the department presents, would like to get clarity on some of the critical issues as to is the equity when you make appointments in the top positions of the department. Is the gender balance?
how often do you skills audit in the department when you develop staff through various development programs of staff? How do you assess impact? How do you assess return on investment along those activities? And I'm also worried about the high rate of resignations. I just noticed having this thing that is frightening teachers. And if a number of them are resigning from the department, it would be clarity as to why is it so. To what extent has the department ensured that learners and teachers are safe in schools, curbing the rate of teenage pregnancy and all those issues? I think they'll be clarified as you do your presentation. To what extent are provinces complying with the prescripts of the BMFA? Those are some of the issues that we'd like to hear as you do the presentation. I will then hand over to the acting DG. You'll be excused at that time, DG. At least you've come. We are very happy that you did manage to come. Thank you. Can then proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to hand over to Ms. Carl, sir. But in the main, our presentation will initially focus on the annual report of the DBD. And when we've done that, then we'll cover some of the areas with the colleagues that are here, which to answer those areas that you've raised as well.
Thank you, Anthony. I just wanted to check on the time allocated for the presentation so that we can pace ourselves accordingly. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I will speak not to each one of the slides as we have captured it in the presentation circulated to members, but I certainly would like to focus on those areas that have a direct bearing on the shape of the presentation today for purposes of engagement. And also, as the acting DJ pointed out, those areas of particular concern we would hope to address during the course of engagement. If it's not adequately covered in the presentation in terms of the format that you refer to. There are sections that will indeed speak to the provisional performance, but excuse me, in this instance, I'm going to outline the presentation as we captured it on the slide overhead, an overview of the service delivery environment and the context, the program performance specifically, as well as the annual financial statements and provincial monitoring. As this is a shared presentation, we will also then take the floor that's particularly going to hand over to CFO. In terms of Part A, as captured in the slide, we refer to our legislative mandate governed by the National Education Policy Act, where we indeed look at the laws and policy for the national system of education, which gives us a particular responsibility for formulation of policy, norms and standards, and the monitoring and evaluation of policy implementation and its resultant impact in the sector. For the period 2013-14, the performance of the environment were influenced by a variety of factors that impacted on the plans and the activities of the DBE, and these were captured under the performance delivery environment in terms of the data information challenges, in terms of the production of quality education statistics through our information systems, access to basic education as governed by the Good Rights and the mandate captured there is about universalizing access to basic education, which includes adult basic education and further education training. Also, the expansion of early childhood development, as we see here, the commitment to ensuring universal access to grade R and to double the numbers of 0 to 4 year old in ECD centers. Also, in terms of the delivery on the curriculum and assessment policy segments, the administering of caps until grade 12, and in order to improve curriculum coverage, and also to give closer and more careful attention to the monitoring of effective teaching and learning within the system. In terms of the production of high quality learning, teaching and support material, and also to ensure a better start of the school year, to ensure the readiness of all provinces to procure and to deliver the LTSM, which includes textbooks before end of the year preceding the new school year. In terms of annual national assessment, which has also been referred to by Uma Lucy, the deepening of the utility of this particular intervention in order to improve learner performance and also to improve our interventions in support of the teaching with the classrooms to ensure that the diagnostic purpose of this particular intervention is fully realized in terms of quality improvement. Then in terms of national senior certificate results, it has also been to ensure that the NSC results look at and provide quality enhancement, but also to ensure the numbers that are actually able to lead the system with the formal NSC qualification. And this is done through the provision of materials which are aimed at improving learning and teaching. Also, the issue of competence and professionalization, and in terms of the status of teachers, which is to improve and ultimately add to the numbers of young teachers that are attracted to the profession, which also then speaks to some of the other interventions in the program in support of the expansion of the qualified base of educators and youngsters attracted to the profession. Finally, also to look at the effective teaching and learning in the classroom is about monitoring and support providers to schools and districts to ensure that our activities are indeed geared towards supporting teachers within the sector. We've also spoken about school infrastructure development, and this in order to provide a safe environment for learning and teaching. It would also be further supported by the delivery around learner well-being. And when we speak to the programs during the course of the presentation, you will see how programs like the National School Nutrition Program and the Integrated School Health Program contribute to the learner well-being as an important part of our mandate. We've also captured the Section 101B interventions, which are intended to provide special guidance in terms of student delivery. Then the second part of this particular area would be around the organization environment, where the oversight role of the DBE is expanded upon in terms of its responsibility to add to sound district management and also to provide curriculum support in terms of its role for the delivery improvement. We also have mandate to obviously look at the alleviation of provincial budget pressures and support in terms of post-provisioning norms and monitoring. Currently part of that mandate in terms of ensuring that both budgetary and control systems, system controls are in place within the sector. We want to focus also in part on the achievements of the financial year. These major achievements include the 16,000 club ECD practitioners with an NQS-4 qualification, 97% of delivery of LZM, the fact that with inclusion of supplementary exams, the peak has been reached of 80.8% for the past rate for matric. And we've also seen over 500,000 learners that have completed the Carry Good Air math literacy campaigns in this financial year. We've also in this period awarded in excess of 14,000 Sundar Shaka bursaries, and during this period also appointed 6,500 6,700 qualified educators who are under the age of 30. The department has also ensured that during this period we have managed to feed 8.8 million learners and 600,000 learners in quintiles 1, 2 and 3 have received Sunday health care services. In terms of each of the individual programs, we have in this particular slide most of our annual targets are the annual targets, and we can see in terms of the apportionment here of quarterly, biannual, and annual targets over here. We have 57 performance indicators, and in the next slide we also speak to the breakdown in terms of the number of targets as we understand. Just in terms of the color scales used. The table there will explain per program the achievement per indicator, and we use the red as our default indicator. In terms of this particular table, we can see the breakdown of indicators here, where 50% more achievement is then given an amber code, and green will indicate when it's fully achieved.
And the program has laid out there are the five budget programs, and each of these will be expanded upon in the following slides. In program one, thank you to take you back, program one is administration. Two of our branches are located there. Program two deals with curriculum policy support and monitoring. Program three is, as we know, there's our teacher branch, which deals with education, human resources, and institutional development. Program four speaks to the planning, information, and assessment program, which includes in this one here the infrastructure component. Program five deals with education and enrichment services, where we have the learner well-being, health and safety, school nutrition, etc. Those programs are located there. In program one, you'll see that the status bar would indicate that most of these have been achieved during this period. This covers the range of internships and staff development activities. It also includes our international relations obligations, where we are in support of government foreign policy and cooperation. And we produce two reports annually, and these reports have all indeed been produced and submitted to the competitive agencies as well. We also here capture those elements that we report on for our impact performance, which is the DPMD initiative, to support the regulations attached to the financial disclosure and performance agreement and the management thereof. In terms of these particular achievements, we have managed to finalize both the performance assessments, although this is prepared after official quasi-guide, and the legal services, also here the litigation, and the range of legal cases that we had during this period have been significantly higher than previous periods. All of these, I think, can be detailed during discussion. The relevant officials are present to speak here. This also captures internal audit and risk management components of the department, and during this period, a whistleblowing policy was developed and approved, and risk registers were signed off by all of the relevant managers. Also, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole range, but it covers international relations and the multilateral affairs. All of the partnerships with our international partners, such as the USAID, JICA, and the Flemish Association. And we also have to, in this particular program, the work of our national and provincial media liaison and communication units. The strategic planning, research, and coordination happens in this project as well, as well as the coordination of all of the statutory meetings of the sector, which include HEDCOM and CEN. And in program two, the performance indicators here deal particularly around the e-education strategy, for which we can report on a range of developments. Our determinants particularly lead the initiatives from a political level, but in terms of the departmental activities, a number of these activities have resulted in enhancement of the teaching environment and also assist in the curriculum support that is that rolls out in districts and provinces. A report on each of the subject on sub-advisors in each district. Two reports were produced, and we see an area there that has not quite satisfied our own expectations, that we can speak to the improvement in the current year, should that be required to engage. Also, the training in terms of multi-grade teaching in all provinces, there we've seen the actual output exceeding the target that is set. During this, for this particular program as well, one of the outputs here is also the very successful Mind Gap title, which was developed to support JPAL performance, in particular math and physical science and mathematical literacy. We've also seen here that the percentage which of learners who have obtained the MC exceeded the expectations, and also in the instance of the provision of further workbooks to support the performance of learners, both in grade 3 and grade 6, can all reflect positive performance there. To continue, we also produced the Siabula checkbooks to support math education, and here, in terms of the package of all grade 9 math workbooks, we've also seen the target being exceeded. The number of different exemplars, other tools that were provided to support annual preparation, here a total of 90 exemplars were developed and supported, and as well as the work in support of life science, accounting and economics, terms of the production of resources to support NSC preparation. Also just a positive indicator there. The database was set up for useful assessment tools, senior assessments. These have been loaded onto our website and have in fact been promoted for the utilization in schools, so this can support learning and teaching at that level too. The number of real workbooks distributed to learners also doubled the target that was initially set. The audit report also on the utilization of assistive devices for 2013 will also declare that the year inclusive education by the minister in their budget vote in that year. And, it could also, I think, really affect a positive status. Maybe just take it back. Also, the number of qualified ECD practitioners in public grade art, here we see a positive result as well in terms of exceeding the initial target that was set. Just to highlight again, the curriculum and implementation monitoring highlight was that the total of 4,000 odd subject advisors were orientated in the delivery of CAPS in the senior phase in grade 12. Also, the introduction to strengthen the teaching of African languages through the rollout of incremental introduction of African languages from grades 1 to 12. We saw this being piloted in, being piloted in 2014 in grade 1. Also, multi-grade teaching and lead audit can be listed here amongst the positive developments in this area. Generally, schools and production, rather the result of far more learners that have passed math with in terms of a bachelor entry, were also drawn from the Dinaledi school during this period. There was a small drop in the participation in physical science, but it did exceed the target by almost 2,000 in terms of the numbers intended. Almost 7 million learners across more than 24,000 schools participated in Anno 2030, and we will be sharing also the in terms of our future engagement with the select committee as well as portfolio committee, some of the findings of those expired for 2030 as well as the future release of the 2014 results data. There were also increases in the results of learners as we have indicated earlier, as well as the number of grade R practitioners who are qualified at level 4. What also significant here was the review of the screening, identification, assessment, and support mechanisms for implementation of inclusive education, and I think my colleague or friend will be able to speak to that in more detail. Learning performance there, as you can see, has a breakdown of third problems. I'm not going to focus on each of those, but honourable members are invited to look at the detail of that, and your question, of course, will be catered for during further engagement with this session today. We also want to list, in terms of the rollout of ICT infrastructure, the participation and partnership which we have with the Department of Communications, as well as the Vodacom Foundation, and the utilization of the DB's two-tone portal, which is used by teachers and loaded on our website for them to access in order to support learning, teaching, and classroom, as well as to support teacher development and school administration and management. We also saw that our workbooks were delivered on time, as well as the printing and production of the workbooks for distribution for 2015, which have already commenced. Library services also received a huge focus during this period, and it will be expanded upon in this current period in the next reporting cycle. But I think it's an important development in terms of looking at library services in a range of manifestations, either through actual library cabinets, container libraries and centralized libraries, partnership with the Department of Arts and Culture. I think we'll take us further to expand access to libraries. I want to take you to the next program 3. Again, here we don't want to list each of the items here, but in terms of other performance indicators, the majority of these in the terms of the second law will detect a positive development on this. Particularly as I look at the impact assessment on Silver Shaka, that particular impact assessment is has been undertaken, and we will report on the terms of reference and the work of the steering committee, which continues in this kind of field. Further, in terms of the monitoring tools, the post-provisioning norms, which are finalized, which were set as targets for finalization, mitigations of the TDM implementation in all 9 provinces was completed, and the findings were all made known to EBSCOM. In terms of the percentage of principals in public ordinary schools, relating to the support services of districts, has been satisfactory. We scored 87% positive delivery on our initial conservative target of 50%. Part of the issue this year would be the total of 6,700 new entries into the HR component of the education sector, and we saw that 3,318 qualified educators resigned. 82% graduates were placed in PEs, and those are the Sundari Shaka graduates. And I think that is clearly an area of interest, as we found also yesterday in our engagement with the Food Selling Committee, so maybe there are further questions in the Catholic Committee as well. We also deployed 68 moderators for the ICMS implementation program, where a total of 9,000 class schools were monitored. I'm going to take you to program 4, where in particular year we're looking at the delivery, all reflecting a positive development in this period under review. However, I think that the findings of the AMA process and the rest, they were all captured in the review and in the report that flowed from here. The pilot study was targeted to be conducted in selected districts for AMA results analyzed in order to inform the support and improvement programs for the schools, and this kind of study report has been compiled in this period. Program 4 also deals with infrastructure, as I pointed out earlier. The number of schools built and completed under the FCD project was charted as 114. 36 schools were in fact completed in the 2013-14 year, and cumulatively at this point, 52 schools have been completed to date for the period under review. The Deputy Minister has pointed out we've gone beyond that time to date in terms of real time. Also, there's a positive improvement on the percentage of 10 to 15-year-olds attending education institutions, as are the other indicators there for learner access and captured in our various categories. You can see that it exceeds the target that has been set. Made reference to the advocacy report on ANA, also being captured here, and the media report, the national report on the set of literacy teaching and learning in the foundation phase. This report was released by the Minister on the 2nd of May 2030, with significant findings to guide our further delivery there. Public exam, also here, this particular program deals with the assessment program beyond ANA, due to NSC. And we saw here that over 500,000 learners and 92,000 part-time candidates wrote the NSC examination. We have the effects on their contribution to this project. In May, June 2013, the senior certificate exam was also successfully administered, with 160,000 candidates who registered the papers on that particular exam. My colleague knows that she's obviously an effect on the fading out of that particular component. National assessments we've spoken to. The international assessments between TIMS and PIRL, these were conducted under the auspices of the International Association for Evaluation and Assessment. And South Africa will participate in the next cycle of TIMS and PIRL, including the three PIRL studies. The financial and fiscal planning also sits within the particular program. And here we'll see how the Minister approved the publication of the 2013 Mosin Schools List, which was published in the Government Gazette, where also 98% of schools have been subjected to electronic capturing, and 10,000 schools have been assessed. The STP program also has been operational since 2011, and the rollout cycle is multi-year in major, and we will be reporting on the particular, we can comment on the particular provincial rollout in the financial year of the state schools in the STP program. In particular, sanitation to date, 226 schools have been provided with sanitation. In terms of water provisioning, 232 schools have been provided with water, and a total of 711 schools are at various stages of procurement contractors and the construction of water. Electrification to date, 150 schools have also been provided in relation with electricity. In terms of information management systems here, in terms of quality of data provided and the reliability of that in terms of planning, the EMIS school census, namely the diversity, the staff survey, etc., were conducted on the date as they indicated in the government gazette. The national EMIS information policy is also in the process of amendment, and that continued into the new reporting period. The planning and delivery oversight, which was announced by the minister, has also intensified all of its support to 81 districts. Of the 18 districts that performed below 65% in 2012 in the NSE exam, 17 improved their performance, and only one district is expected to show the minor decrease. Mrs. Jamaica's chairman was able to speak in great detail to the work of the planning and delivery oversight unit. There was all the work done in this particular unit to contribute to the work of the education collaboration framework, and they profiled 7,750 schools in terms of providing the basis for the planning, ongoing planning for the work of the unit and its intervention. Also, in terms of our responses to the presidential hotline, we exceeded the 90% benchmark set our presidency, in which we've been able to resolve a number of queries that find their way to us via this route, coupled also with the resolution of inquiries which come via the DBE call center for this particular period. NIDIA also produced the National Report on Teaching and Learning, as I said earlier, and in this national report, critical factors were identified which inhibit the advancement of our sector goals. In Program 5, which deals specifically with school and regional services, we know it as our branch X, which speaks to social mobilization and support services. Here, the target for the number of learners which are to benefit from the integrated school health program, we were just under target here, and the total for quarters two, this is one of our annual targets. You will see details listed there. Also, the number of learners that are provided with meals in the school nutrition program has been exceeded in 2001 and 123 schools, as well as the SACKI cuddle competition run by the department has grown in terms of its popularity and buying from schools, and it's one of our flagship events that we are really proud of as we do in terms of capturing learner participation, teacher participation in the part of our delivery in terms of schoolwork. We've also seen the expansion of learner participation in sport, and that partnership with the Department of Sport and Recreation of Africa grows daily, and we've seen different developments on the MOU that we have with the Department of Sport and Recreation. In particular, the achievements include the HIEA's Life Skills Education Program, where educators continue to benefit from interventions and training to support the implementation of sexual and reproductive health programs in schools. We also have a partnership, which is with the sexual health sexual HIV prevention program, where the department has recruited a consultant to support the DBE with the development of our planning over the next 3 to 5 years. Also, the DBE strategy on alcohol and drug use was approved for implementation by the Council of Ministers, and the first support around the human papillomavirus vaccination program in schools was approved also in the period 2013, and we've seen the rollout in March 2014 of this Act 4.4. This is part of our prevention program, our early intervention program for prevention of cervical cancer. the other partnerships I've listed there are there for your further review, and he's included a number of the corporates that have come on board to support the DE's intervention in schools, in terms of their provision and their support for National School Nutrition Program, as well as our social mobilization programs and support. The school nutrition program, I'm not going to go into the detail there, but just also to focus on social cohesion and community mobilization in support of and gender equity in education. The course of LGBT outreach competition is a very popular one, held in the month of September when we celebrate heritage. We've also seen the programs which are supported by UNICEF going out very successfully in all of our, in those target areas. I'm now going to pause there and hand over to the CFO to focus on Part C due to the annual financial statement. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. In order to execute the programs that have been outlined in the previous slide, the department was allocated 17.619 billion, and of that 17.011 billion was spent. But the money was broken down into the right programs as indicated, that we have five programs, and it was allocated as indicated in the slide. And most of the programs spent 99% of their allocation. The only program that spent beyond 99% is program 4, which is planning, information and assessment. And the reason for the deviation or for underspending for program 4, it was mainly on a school infrastructure backlog indirect grant, which is known as ACID. The underspending on that program was 560 million. And then on program 5, the underspending was 45.217 million. That one was because of low spending on some of the conditional grants in the department. For instance, the KwaZulu-Natal province underspent on the HIV and AIDS, and the last transfer of 9.727 million was not transferred, it was withheld by the department as required by the DORA. And then for the technical schools recapitalization conditional grants, Eastern Cape and Limpopo provinces, an amount of 34.607 million was not transferred due to low spending. As was indicated on the school infrastructure backlog grant that although the underspending was about 560 million, the accruals on our city were about 390 million. So had we received the invoices on time, we would have spent much more than what is reflected there. In terms of economic classification, for compensation of employees, we spent 99% as well. Goods and services, there was a bit of over expenditure there. This one was mainly because of examiners and model tests they submit their claims, so they don't submit their claims on time. And we have developed a plan of how to deal with them and ensure that the claims are admitted on time so that we don't overspend in a financial year. Taxes and subsidies, the 44 is the conditional grants one that was withheld due to spending HIV and AIDS in KZN, and technical schools in the two provinces, Limpopo and Eastern Cape. And then payment for capital assets, the underspending there, 562 is because of the ACD program where we not spend as projected. We only spent 71.2%. And the reasons as I've indicated, for instance, maybe if I can go through them just quickly. For compensation, there's not many vacancies, but as indicated, there's a few vacancies that were not filled or filled later in financial year, hence we had underspending. And goods and services, it was due to the number of question papers that were set. The number was higher than what we had originally been paying, but as I indicated, there was also late submission of claims. And then there were additional exemplars that were also set, which also contributed to the high expenditure for the exams unit. The backlog grant, I've already explained that one. And then this is just the information on conditional grants, just to show the amounts that were allocated to conditional grants. We have the education infrastructure grant that we transferred to the nine provinces, school nutrition program, HIV and AIDS, school schools and technical schools recapitalization.
Now, for the first two, education infrastructure and school nutrition, percentage spent is higher than the available amount. But what I want to clarify to the committee is that it was not overspent in the books of the department. It was overspent in the provinces. Now, we showed it this way because when we ask for information from the province, they give us the full amount they spent on a particular grant. But in the books of the department, we did not overspend. So the overexpenditure will reflect in the books of the provinces. And then, as indicated, HIV and AIDS, there was a withholding because of understanding for KZN. And then Dinalese spent 95%. Technical schools at two provinces, Limpopo and Eastern Cape, and spent since we withheld the last transfers for those conditional grants. And then the audit general's report, the department received an unqualified audit opinion with emphasis of matter, and the matters of emphasis that were indicated there was the restatement of some of the amounts that were reflected at the end of March 2018, and they had to be corrected in 2014. And then the other issue that was of concern to the Auditor General was the spending on the program 4, which was materially underspent by 560 million. And this was in respect of the ACD program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is the end of the presentation.
No, I just want to,
okay.
Just want to point out that we added a particular section for any further questions from the members of the committee on the provincial financial performance. It was a query that came from the board for the committee as well, and this is a benefit of the breakdown of provincial performance just by further measure. But we want to speak about this directly.
Okay, that page is of great interest to us as members of the select committee. We have come to the end of the presentation by DBE. I will then hand over to the members to ask questions to Madush and DBE. Over to you, members. Honorable Amini, Honorable Skolek Bali, Honorable Maduro. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My greetings to the Honorable Deputy Minister, the Acting DG, and the entire management. Let me start by appreciating again the good work that has been done by the department together with Umalosi. We really appreciate. Maybe we are being difficult to ourselves, because most of the time when we measure the work that we have done so far and compare from where we're coming from, we pretend as if the amount of work is the same as it is now as compared to as it was before. Those are two different worlds. It's not the same. There is absolutely an amount, additional amount of work that we are doing now. As I said in our last interaction, that we are discovering everyone, each and every child in South Africa as compared to before. So for me, we've done and a lot of work. That is why I'm saying sometimes it becomes difficult to ourselves and say, no, they will do better than what we're doing now. No, it's not the same. Those are two different worlds that we're dealing with. We really appreciate that. But having said that, I want to start with this last slide, if you can go back to that one. The provincial one, as the chairperson said, that we are representing provinces. When I saw that from the research analysis, I was asking myself whether, I know that I might be asking you something that is beyond your control, it could be a policy issue, because you may not be able to do a direct oversight to provinces. But from where we are sitting, we are oversighting not only money or budget allocated to department, you are the one to ask. Then we have to ask issues of education. We have to ask questions from you.
fair or unfairly, unfortunately, that is how we must. The question I have on this slide, to what extent do you take these interactions seriously? What happens with the inputs that are raised by members? Do you take them seriously? I'm being honest and clear. Do you take them seriously? Are they implemented? Because as we said last time, that our role is to do oversight at a strengthened department, raise issues, not to destroy, but to strengthen the department. If you look at the trend there, take Eastern Gate for example. Disclaimer, qualified. No, at least you're starting in 2011, the document I have is starting from 2009. Where other provinces, for the past 4 years, there have not been some changes. That is why I'm asking the question, what do you do with the questions or issues that raised in this interaction? Not only us, also the portfolio committee, they're asking the same questions. Should be worried. Should be worried where you are sitting and there are no changes. Where we can have a clean audit at national level, but it's the most critical part where you are seeing your face is at school level. How you perform there. At provincial level, how your provinces are performing. So I'm just flagging this question, to what extent do you take these intersections seriously? Because for me, if we engage, I expect difference when we meet again the following year. If things are still the same, it might mean that our inputs are not taken seriously. So I'm just flagging that one. Umendo will say, the issue of, there is this question that is being asked, but I'm not an education specialist. But doesn't mean that I'm not educated. So I want to be clear on that one. No, we are the lowest in terms of the quality. There's nothing that has been on the media recently. I'm sure you know it better than me. What is that thing? For me, as a lay person, I see us progressing in terms of education. The result, the pass rate, and everything, and as you presented, I think it has confirmed most of my assumptions. But what was on the media? What was that thing that was on the media? Where does it come from? Who is doing that? And the status of that organization that is assessing us, we need to be clarified, because if those things are not really from credible or whatever sources, it might be misleading to people out there. It might be misleading. Because the report that you are getting and what we see as lay people, maybe as a parent, it's totally different from what is said by people out there. Mina, I went through this education system until it was under 4 times. I could not write a letter. I don't know what to do. I could not write a letter. So what are these things that are coming up now? Why do people feel that education has gone down during this current administration or government? The role on the issue of the private schools, the accreditation, I heard that you are also responsible for that. To what extent do you monitor the private schools? What is happening there in schools with the high rate of foreign, I'm not very clear on that one, but I'm concerned, really. Even when you interact with some of the children from some private schools, when you interact with them, the accent is not like, sound like xenophobic, it's not like South African. You pick up a certain kind of in a South African child, the accent. To what extent do you monitor that? The majority of teachers, their qualifications, are they qualified, or they're just taking chances here in South Africa? The issue of the corporal punishment in those kind of schools, the case of Sefax in Mpumalanga, where a child was killed through corporal punishment.
It has to be also the first one. I think it should be the second one now. Medical punishment. Do we monitor whether government policies are upheld by those private schools, or we just say they're private, we don't care? And also during exams, do we do the monitoring when they write exams? Because some of them, if you compare a child from a public school, the interaction, maybe the child at home, one is in the private school, one is in the public, private. But when they write exams, the other one pass, get very high marks. And the other one, whom you think as a parent is doing better, at the public school, that's long. Abakopi, I mean, that's what I'm trying to ask. Abakopi is in Rwanda to get more money from subsidy from government. For most parents, so they get more subsidy from government. Then the last issue, I will leave these other issues for other members. For education, we indicated last time when we met that we bring oversight. We want to appreciate the cooperation from the Department of Availability of officials throughout the process. Honorable Deputy Minister, we picked one school that needs urgent attention. Out of the schools that we visited, the other one is old, doing very well, which also needs your attention. It needs some renovations, but the management of the school, everything is right after. Kangelizwe is a O.R. Tambo district and that. But we also visited one school which spoiled our day in Dijwa. It's also at Mutat. If I can exaggerate, I would say there is no school there. If I you can tell from the results, the number has been above 40%, 30%,
40%.
For last year it was 18% pass rate for the matriculants. We got a presentation from the children. There is no school. We are requesting for agent intervention. I don't think those children are ready to write exams because they're not attending school. Teachers are not there. Even the principal is not there. There's absolutely no school there. And those children are willing to learn, but nobody is teaching them. It's a request for an intervention. I want to speak to the dashboard, your page 11. That is the last one chapter saying, I'm sorry. Page 11. Yeah, that's the summary. If you look at these three plates on the other side, that is a correct explanation on how the dashboard works. But when you now apply, fit in your results, it's different. You can't have an amber and a green. It's either green or amber. Let's take program 2, for example. You have 5 under amber. The target is 21. Under Ember, you have 5, meaning that you have not achieved. You have 16 there. It doesn't work like that. If you look at your last bullet, it says green will be reflected when the target has been fully achieved. That's correct understanding of a dashboard. So you have to work on a document, because if you look at the application throughout the document, you ask yourself, why does the department not have a green audit, because it's more green than Emma. So it has to be corrected, it's misleading. I wanted to draw that one. It applies throughout the document. You have only one red throughout the document, which suggests that you're doing very efficiently there, which is not the case. So I'm just saying the document is coming from the monitoring unit. Correct that document. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. From my side, I also want to thank the Minister and the Deputy Minister for their passion, and I said it last week also in the House. We really appreciate it, what you do for education, and we know you are honest in your whole
action regarding the education, and I know we are going forward. It's slow, but we will be there. At this stage, we will be definitely there. Thank you very much for that. I've got a couple of questions. Sometimes I mix it with the two groups we have here this morning, but I know, I think you will answer it in regarding to that as well. I want to know my first question. How compare South Africa, and I think the previous member also asked it in a way, South Africa's standards in qualifications regarding to the rest of the world. I think that is very important to know that, and that is the questions we get from the public. And they always say, but South Africa is behind. We are behind. And I don't think really that is the truth. So if you can just give us an answer regarding that, I will appreciate it. The FED colleges, we visit the FED colleges in our oversight visits, and that is one of our main tasks, is oversight throughout South Africa. So these questions will come up a lot of times when you ask questions, and that is what we find in our oversight visits in some districts in South Africa. We were in Mthatha, and the FED college there is at the stage it was going very bad, but it seems to us that it is going very well now at the stage, and that it has 7 campuses. The KAD Fed College, and one of the campuses, something is wrong there. It seems to me that half of the campus classes is occupied by someone else, and now the department must deliver. Temporary classes there, and that is actually not necessary. So, if we can investigate, I already reported it to the Eastern Cape government as well. But I think we must take notice here at the national as well of that the campuses, and that has an influence on the students and the results and everything on that specific campus. So, if we can look into that, I think that will be a good story from national side. The accreditation of private providers, I'm worried about that because you said you are not doing site visits at the stage on that private providers. So I want to know why are you not doing site visits, because that also can occur a problem at the end of the day regarding the results of the institutions. So if you can give us an answer. I'm also worried about the results of schools in our rural areas, and that is the areas where we have a problem, as we mentioned it in the previous member as well. And it's not only in Mthatha, that is all over South Africa, where we have a passing rate less than 40%. What are we going to do to help and support these people so that we can get a better passing rate in that area? I think if we listen to what happened to these schools, we drive along, and then 11:30, 10:30, the children is going out, and nothing is really going on in that school in the rural area. And one of the main problems we have there is, and they're not only in education, it's also in health, at hospitals. People do not want to be in the rural areas. And you said, we attract teachers to rural schools. But how? How are you going to do it? How are we going to get qualified teachers and good teachers in our rural areas? Because that children also need good education. Not only in our urban areas, we need it also in our rural areas. And what are you going to do? And how are you going to do it? Then I want to know, Honourable Deputy Minister, maybe you can answer us, about when are we going to fill this acting director post? What is going on there? Why are they always acting people? And then it took year, 2 years before we can fill that post. What is going on there so that we can go on and carry on and not put pressure on our acting director now, general director at this stage? And schools infrastructure. I just want to talk about that as well. I was last year, 2013, in Zimbabwe, and this year with the elections I was in Mozambique. And I'm telling you, the people are suffering there. I was in the rural areas, and in fact we are looking into the schools. Really, the infrastructure is bad. I don't know what is going inside the schools. I think the education is carrying on there. In South Africa, it is a totally different situation. In our rural areas, we can see these developments. Our schools are getting better. And we are moving forward. And if you're looking at your neighbor countries, I'm afraid we can compare us with them, and we are really in a better situation at this stage. And I think we can thank the department for that as well. The backlog of teachers in South Africa, especially in grade 1 to 7 and then grade 8 to 12, if you can just give us an indication, what is the backlog and what is the main reason for people, for younger teachers that just get out of the system. I'm worried about that, because we must have a new generation coming up into our education system, and this is not really happening. And if they are there, they are there for 1-2 years and then they just disappear. Why? What is the reason? Why can't we keep them in our system? That is very important. I know our unions play a very, very big role in education. And sometimes it is very, very negative to our system. And I also want to know, what are we going to do to better the situation between the unions in education, so that we can go forward and that it can be progress? But because it's easy, we visit schools in the past, teachers just sit there, and then they belong to a certain union, and there's no education going on. And at the end of the day, it is our children and our learners who's getting hurt. So what are we going to do to better the situation between unions and to make the feedback of unions maybe less? I don't know. In the system. And then the last question from my vice chairperson is HIV and AIDS. What is the situation in our schools? Is there an increase or a decrease at the stage? And are you as a department happy about what is going on regarding that at this moment? Thank you very much.
The representative of the other deputies already indicated that what I'm doing makes our patients be good. This also makes me to ask the question, because we can't be members of parliament to come sit down, listen to input of us, move ahead, and at the end of the day, we can see what is happening. Our members have already indicated the frustration that we're facing as members of this electoral body. But I want to know, what's happening in Jambo? What kind of audit process are we seeing? Are we supposed to blame the province? Are we supposed to blame the national government, who was put under administration? What is the difference? What is the difference between the performance of the national department and the provincial department? What makes a difference? There's no difference. What role are they playing? I can't see it. The other question, what is the difference between the level 4? You call it general education and training certificate. Because people down there, they take it as a grade 12. Though you may understand it's not like grade 12, but it maybe might be classified further, so that I'm able to explain to them, or guys, when you're doing this other thing of yours, the level 4, don't regard it as grade 12, because I think you still have got a long way to go. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. On the other issues which I wanted to ask, I was really covered by my colleagues. Let me take this opportunity also just to congratulate the department and Umalus for the good work that they are doing. And then also I just want to highlight one simple thing, but which is not a significant contribution or to the entire country or the history of South Africa. The Minister of Arts and Culture was on record in the NCOP House that one of his priorities for this financial is to ensure that all the schools throughout the country they must be hanging the flag of South Africa very high. Now we also had engagements with the Department of the Kid and we also appointed them. We are on oversight in the Eastern Cape, like my colleagues have indicated. And to all the schools that we went, I know it's a small thing, but that flag was high, was flying very high in all the schools that we went to. And then even to other schools we did not visit on our way, but we would hear or know the system, and which is has got a very good resemblance and contribution. I mean, given the fact that we are a rainbow nation, and then also given the history of South Africa, and then also the democracy of South Africa, which was achieved in 1994, all those issues. So I thought I was just raising in passing to say it's a good thing that the department is doing. Honorable Chairperson, there's an issue. The matriculants are currently sitting for exams throughout the country. And I think under correction yesterday, they were writing maths and science. They were set for maths and science yesterday. So what happened actually, the Department of Basic Education from the President and Department, they've already congratulated all the matriculants, wish them well in their future endeavors, and we are looking forward for a good percentage. But now for the Northern Cape as a province is a different situation. And I'm raising it here because there are more than 469 learners, matriculants in the Northern Cape, which are affected by the issue of the road and the protest in the area, which I think the department is quite familiar with the dynamics. Now, the official position of the department is that all 469 will not be sitting for exams now because of the lost ground. So they are already deregistered from the school. I mean, they are re-registered, not deregistered, sorry. They are re-registered as part-time students so that they can sit for exams next year in March 2015. So I just want to know from the department, maybe you must take us as a select committee into confidence to say what are the unintended consequences or the implications if those students or those matriculants were supposed to sit now for exam. What was going to be the implications of that? Because I think sometimes we don't understand it correctly because it tends to create a lot of confusion to some of us to say why is the department taking this approach and it says if you are taking away the basic right of a matriculant to sit for exams, and I say, no, you must sit next year of that. So I just thought, maybe if the department can clarify in that regard, to know, what are the unintended consequences? Because I know, as it relates to from grade 1 up until grade 11, there is already a position from the province. All of them will have to go and repeat from the 8 schools that are affected in the district or in the region. All of them are going to repeat this next year. So I've got an issue also around, I know there's an agreement which was signed by sports and recreation and the Department of Basic Education around the sports school program. And every time we meet with the Department of Basic Education, they tell us a little bit of the progress that they've made, but also highlighting a few challenges that they are facing. And when we meet again with sports and recreation, they tell us, no, we need the support of basic education to introduce sports in the curriculum. So that the issue of sports in schools is not just treated as a by-the-way issue. Where teachers should know we're not getting reimbursed for offering this particular curriculum at school. So I just want to know, how far are you as a department in relation to the implementation of the sports in schools? And also I just want to find out, there was an issue about the textbook saga a few years ago, which the department, I'm of the view, they responded very swiftly in regard to that. Now, there's progress that is made up to so far. The learners at schools, they are getting their textbooks and all of that. So I just want to know if the department has got an approach or a policy in place to ensure that all the textbooks that are being given to learners at schools, at the end of the day, they are being able to get through, so that we don't see it again as a problem in the future where kids are not having access to textbooks and all of that. The last issue is the security measures in the different schools. Our teachers and the learners are exposed generally to threats. Some of the schools where they attend, they don't even have proper fencing or proper security in place. So our kids and learners are exposed to all sorts of other things. So I want to know, as a department, what is it that you are doing to assist the schools so that we don't expose the kids and the learners and the teachers to different forms of crimes when they are on duty. I think that's my contribution, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and just to welcome my colleagues to say to the Deputy Minister, my compliments again and again and again. And the speaker was just said when you're in the house addressing us sometime last week, and I know for a fact the efforts and support is reciprocal to your colleagues and yourself. I just want to note on the ICD projects, the poor performance on the ICD projects. The department had targeted to build 140 schools and only 36 were built, and I want to know what has been, what is your answer to the shortfall of 104 on the ICD project? That's my first thing. Secondly, I know for a fact that you're putting incentives in place to draw the teachers into rural areas. My concern, Prof, is the teachers, particularly in the Eastern Cape, who are moving away from the rural areas, wanting to get into urban areas. And the problem is they're sitting with the numbers have decreased. Because also the learners have come to the urban areas. How are you going to mitigate that? That is a real problem, because putting incentives in place, putting so much money to draw them, and the number of learners is decreasing. So I see a contradiction in your actions and what is happening present and the reality. The food of shelter bursaries, I want some clarity on that. There is a fair challenge that is happening. The number of students pursuing to become teachers is far less than what we are offering. Can I get some clarity on that? There's a bit of confusion. A reading report on the terms of the charter that says the department, as much as we appreciate the fact that you're trying to tantalize as much as possible on the learners to take advantage of the funds of charter bursaries, but there's minimal or less interest, if I could put it that way, less interest in getting the learners to pursue that. And probably that's a concern. I'm seeing so much volcanic eruption happening in terms of us getting qualified educators to sustain the quality of education that we envisage for our future South Africans. The court cases. Haven't had anything on the court cases. How much has been spent by the department in addressing some of the court cases that you have been faced with, and what is the status in that? How are you responding to that? How much money has been spent? We don't want to rely on the possible. Sometimes we want to hear it from the horse's mouth. Some other concern that I want to know, these were my questions. KZN has been receiving qualified audit opinions for past four financial years and is always amongst those showing bad financial behavior. That is in 2011-12 to be specific, on the 6.5 million. On the regular expenditure, what are you doing about this? Because there has been 350.4 million that's been reported. Does the Department of Education have an indication on the irregular expenditure in CARE in 2013 and 14? The report I'm talking about is a 2012-13. I want some explanation on that. And the last one, ma'am, a cause of concern is the state of financial discipline in the provinces, as it has been highlighted on the screen there. The Northern Cape is receiving a qualified opinion since 2009 till today. Fifth has regressed to qualified opinions. What are you putting in place also to do that, which is an extension of what Abed Kalu wanted to us post from a colleague earlier on? I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm asking on the process that I hear my colleagues are already referring to the oversight visit report far as I'm concerned, we as a committee and as a council, we have not yet tabled the report in the council. We have not yet adopted the report as a committee. So I want to know on the process whether we should actually ask the department the question on the report that we have not yet even adopted or presented in council. What I would suggest, Honourable Chair, is that can we concentrate ourselves on this presentation of today and not talk on the issues of the report, because the report is not yet even adopted or even presented in house. That's the direction that I would like to get from the Chair.
We are waiting your point. What is good for the business?
And we expressed the concern about the NQFO.
that is made up of learners that have simply passed grade 12, and we really strongly felt as a committee that the practitioners that handle these children should be trained and adequately qualified, because that is where we lay the foundation. If the foundation is wrong, you will not expect good practice in the higher level of their education. And also the issue of the Millennium Development Goals, have we reached a level where we can say that we've been able to achieve universal access as a country to address the Millennium Development Goals of primary education at least? With regards to my Dr. Prof, one minute, thank you very much for the presentation. However, one would like to know, because you are responsible for quality assurance, and when you come to the given, they've got those that have to be accredited by CITA. And you are also assuring quality. What would be your relationship between that kind of accreditation and the accreditation that has to be done by the CITA? Yes, indeed, the independent government gives credence to the city. Maybe those few questions, then I would advise you for this, starting with the Umadusi, then the department thereafter. Thank you. Oh, okay. I can give you.
I was going to ask Honorable Chair that we go first. That's it.
Perfect.
I'm just going to cover two before he leaves, and then I think the Deputy Minister will cover. We'll make his input, and colleagues will come in on the areas he's not covered. I just want to start with the oversight visit. I understand what the House has discussed, but once the visit had been concluded, the colleagues we had sent out provided a report to the acting DG, and basically from it, we've actioned that there are different line functions that are effective in terms of what needs to be done in that one particular school as well as some of the others. So those managers have been asked to look at their matters and to come forward with proposals to take forward this. In fact, by Friday, I must get a report. So that we do look at something before the end of the year, but in more particular, to ensure that we are in a better position when schools reopen in 2015. So we need to be realistic about what we can do to the end, but we need to start something, and it may not be limited to the school only. I think that was the first point. On the second, I think on whether we take these matters seriously, basically we make notes, yeah, but we also have these meetings recorded as a report, and we take back, and if we've not covered and provided responses, we come back to committee. The fact that the Minister and the Deputy Minister is here is one indication of seriousness, and we then back up in terms of delivering what's been discussed here. So just to indicate in terms of these odds, our directive has been that some of the provinces, as correctly pointed out, the Eastern Cape, have made movement from this payment to qualification. Some have regressed. So it's like five provinces that are with qualifications or worse. And what you find is that depending on what the findings are, if you go deeper into the reports of the Free State, for example, you find the qualification is about something they put in their APB that says that they would offer meals at 10 o'clock. So the AG goes and finds that the meal is being at 10:30. That's a fine. So you need to balance, but at the end of the day, you need to address all of these if you're looking for them. But our directive has been that in the next 2 years, over the next 2 years, work with all provinces to ensure that there's improvement, and that we move all these provinces to unqualified. That includes, while taking care of others, we need to ensure that we ourselves as the Department of Basic Education also ensure that we have an unqualified, and if there is such a thing as a clean audit, we work towards that at home as well. And we have a team that we put together who's made up of various people from financial auditing as well as the line managers that have already gone out two provinces to work with the five in particular that are qualified. This team is just not the DBT, it includes the national treasury. So the work, we've been doing it before, but now we're working on the basis that we will bring in outside resources if necessary, and actually to go and speak in those provinces to actually assist them to fix some of the things that are there. Some provinces are able to do it, like in Mpumalanga, for example, has moved from being qualified to over the last 2 to 3 years, standing before it is really being unqualified. So I think that's in terms of that area. But I think the Deputy Minister will cover many others and maybe even elaborate.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, may I, at the outset, express my gratitude to the Honorable Member for the kind words that they have to say about the Ministry as well as the officials of the Department. It really is very encouraging, and certainly a measure of recognition does help in terms of motivating, particularly our officials who work so hard in terms of the achievements that we've made. Honorable Chair, I would like to start with your question first, because I think a very, very important question, particularly in the context of the National Council of Provinces that has responsibility of representing adequately and appropriately the provincial interests. There are some competencies that are national, such as justice, for example, correctional services, land, and there are other competencies that are concurrent competencies. I'm trying to do this as plain the language as possible. It would include education, health, agriculture, etc. Now, when there is a concurrent competency, the province has a particular responsibility to deliver within the area of competency, unless there are norms that take that competency away from the province. So, for example, the procurement of textbooks, the provision of teachers, the provision of infrastructure, etc., are competencies that fall squarely within the governance structure of the province. In terms of the constitution, the national department, the national government, and in particular responsibility, I think it's section 52 or 54, it's subject to question, I don't have the constitution here, to support provinces, and in as much as provinces, provincial government has a responsibility to support local government. Now, the way we have been working is quite interesting in the Department of Education, and I don't want to speak in general terms, but specifically as to the department. The measures that we've introduced in order to bring provinces close to the national department, one is through law. We have what we call the Council of Education Ministers Meetings, CEM, by statute. The equivalent of that in other departments, quite informally, is the MEX. Now, what that does, it basically deals with issues of policy, policy change, challenges that are generic and specific amongst ACs for Education and the Ministry. And decisions are taken, so there is always a consultative forum where we move forward together. The second mechanism that was introduced by the Minister, which I'm very proud of, and she certainly can celebrate that, is the fact that every quarter for the past 5 years, we have been, as a Ministry and Senior Management of the Department of Basic Education, meeting with district directors throughout the country, all provinces. It's apolitical, it's determined to really look at issues that confront our district directors on the ground. The question that then arises in terms of the very, very significant area and complex area of concurrent competencies is what if provinces do not fulfill their executive or administrative responsibilities. There are two things that can happen. You can have an intervention in section 101A in terms where the minister would ask the MEC, would give directives to the MEC to do X, Y, Z, to say in terms of the norms, in terms of what we require, in terms of the constitution provisions, you are expected to do A, B, C. We give you this period of time in which to do so and provide us a report within that period of time. Where that occurs usually where certain areas of the administration and the governance of that particular sector, that's education in the province, you can basically draw the attention to the fact there are deficits. So maybe they do well in other areas, but say early childhood development, they haven't looked particularly at facilities. So the minister can then issue a directive to them in terms of section 101A. However, when there is a collapse of governance within a province, as has occurred in Eastern Cape, as has occurred in Limpopo, then we introduce, or the constitution allows you to take over both the administrative and executive functions of a particular province. So, for example, and I'm sorry I'm going to elaborate, but perhaps it also assist colleagues in terms of what, how they see this relationship and can understand the relationship both from a legal, prudential, and philosophical basis. They would then basically assume this authority. Now, your
your institution has a very important role, because cabinet has to make a decision to intervene. The decision has to be taken with the National Council of Provinces. The National Council of Provinces must then endorse that decision to say the intervention is indeed in the best interest of the province. And when the intervention has to be terminated, it cannot occur arbitrarily by the National Department. It has to occur through the intervention or with the support of the National Council of Provinces, which means that again, either the minister or the deputy minister will basically provide a report first to cabinet to say, well, this is where we are, this is what we can, then take it to the National Council of Provinces, table it for discussion and debate, and then abide by the decision of the National Council of Provinces. So as an institution, you have a powerful mechanism which would control either the intervention or the aborting or termination of that intervention. I thought that would help you in terms of background, which takes us then to the question that the Honourable Member had asked about Limpopo and what has happened as a result of the intervention. I would like perhaps maybe just to share with you all the provinces very briefly. In the Eastern Cape, for example, the intervention was based on five factors. The suspended provision of school nutrition, the suspended transport, the books and stationery were not supplied, schools were without teachers, and the financial system had collapsed completely. We had to basically put in mechanisms. As we speak right now, books have been delivered on time, nutrition is being provided, transport is being provided to more than 55,000 learners. It's not perfect, but certainly significant improvement is seen from the audit report itself. For the first time in the past 2 years, it had a qualified audit. It always had a disclaimer before, since the advent of democracy. So interventions do help. Whereas interventions originally were hostile in this sense, it's never occurred before where the national department or the national government has intervened in terms of Section 101B. It occurred for the first time in the Eastern Cape as a sector, and in multiple sectors in Limpopo. Now obviously, that creates a contestation between governments. The Premier or the MEC would want to know, what about my political authority? Is it being subsumed by the National Department? Is the Minister now taking over my responsibility? What about the head of the department there? Now because there's been no legislation, because it occurred for the first time, we have to develop certain protocols and approaches. And I can assure you now, you can go to the Eastern Cape and ask the MEC, the acting head of the department, or any officials, and they will say, well, the administration, the intervention has worked for the mutual benefit of the national department as well as the provincial department. Because we've done collaboratively, because we didn't arbitrarily take over, because we sought to develop capacity within the province to be able to assume those responsibilities and functions. Similarly, the problem in Kopo was perhaps even larger in the sense there were more difficulties. But I'll just take one example, and because it's raised by one of the honourable members who in fact complimented us, I think it was Honourable Scott, who basically complimented us for basically responding to that issue. Interestingly, the province did the best in terms of the procurement of textbooks, and to do so at the most economical rate was important, followed by the Eastern Cape. Two provinces that were under administration, where there was the least expectation that it got the expectation. We created on Thursday, and colleagues would remember the issue, the challenge of additional surplus or redundant for double park issues. Huge problem, both in Eastern Cape and Limpopo. Limpopo had more than 2,000 additional teachers. They've reduced it to less than 100. Less than five. Now, nobody can suggest that it's not ready for change in terms of the infrastructure. It's huge. But it didn't occur as a result of the minister or the deputy minister. Let me be very honest. The minister has been a wonderful driving hand. But if these senior managers who have left their other tasks and responsibilities, they have gone, they provided the human capacity, free of charge, mahala, to the provinces. We don't get money from Treasury, we don't get human resource capacity, but we did it because these are our children, whether they are in the Western Cape, whether they are in the Limpopo, or in the Eastern Cape. And I just thought that is important to convey to you. We haven't solved all the problems in the Limpopo, but I think slowly but surely we are going to move towards improving the situation in that regard. And again, our senior managers have done wonderfully well in terms of providing the appropriate support. I'm now going to basically deal with the issues as they arise, and obviously my colleague would want to augment whenever possible. The issue of ECD practitioners compared to the other coverage, chairperson. Sorry, I tend to forget where I am. You know, it's a busy time where you're basically having meetings and institutional responsibilities at the same time. But if you are a comrade, you are a comrade. I won't apologize for that, and that's it. The practitioners, you know, when we started with, you know, it's important to understand the history of early childhood development. I know because I've been in education for the longest serving executive member in education, except for a small stint in justice, but it's like almost 10 years, maybe 9 years. And I remember the discussions in cabinet where I raised my concern about the fact that there was no allocation at all for grade R. It was an informal integration because both the former minister and myself agreed that, look, if we don't get our grade R to schools, we would not be able to control the environment, regulate the practitioner's capacity, do whatever is necessary. Without budget, we introduced it, and then we demanded it. And I'm so happy that the NDP has said that you need at least 2 years, but certainly 1 year is a minimum. Right now, we have more than 850,000, if I'm not mistaken, children who are in grade R. Now, a grade R class is very different from an ordinary class. You learn through play. It's not formal learning that takes place. You go there in the jungle gym, you go there in toilet, the sanitation facilities are different. The way you lay out your grade R with your child is completely different from another class. The practitioners have to be qualified. And across the country at the time, we had an unevenness in terms of payment. Payments were stagnant. You will remember, colleagues, those of you who were in the education sector, 1,200 in KwaZulu-Natal, 2,800 in Limpopo, 3,000 in some parts of the Northwest, 4,000 in other parts. And we at least, let's have at least a decent minimum threshold. And the minimum threshold we agreed upon was 5,000. And indeed, some provinces have now begun to increase, even go beyond that. And up to last year, in fact, there were 7 of the 9 provinces that agreed. 2 of the provinces were unable to do so, 3 states and Limpopo. We persuaded them, and now they are all on board. But what we want to do is ensure that our practitioners become part of the professional corps, and that means they're going to be adequately qualified. Less, you know, less than 2,000 of the practitioners were qualified today, that is MQ4, that's level 4. Today, more than 14,000 have at least a level 4. We are saying that we require them to have at least a level 6 qualification, and we agree with you. Because that is the foundation of learning. That is where things can go right or wrong. And then you've got to relearn if you read the wrong way. And that's a huge cost otherwise. And when we're beginning to train and provide opportunities for our practitioners, I would say, as I said out here, that more than 9% of our practitioners have at least a level 4, which we believe is a minimum threshold, but we've got to move as a transition to level 6. Now the other competition, MDP says 2 years. Grade R is now with social development. We've developed a curriculum from 0 to 4 years of age. But we do not control that environment. We support it. We've got to train those practitioners as well. And there's something like 6,000 early childhood development centers. And there is, I'm just trying to think about the figures, but social development, but it's huge, it's huge. Indeed, interestingly enough, the 0 to 4 gets a bigger allocation than the grade R learner in school. That's another reality. So what we are saying in a nutshell, A, that we've got to up the qualifications to level 6, B, that we've got to make sure that we provide adequate resources to grade Rs, and for the first time in the history of this country, every grade R learner receives in his or her language a resource pack, free of charge, left in black, quintile 1 to quintile 5. Mahalo. That's huge. We have a curriculum, we have a resource pack, each development is taking place in a huge region. He will tell you, Ken Bakhtajana will tell you how hard they were in that particular area. So it's remarkable. I thought I'd share that with you. Now, the other thing in regard to the MDD that you raised, Chair, and I'm not starting with you first because you are the Chair, but this is how I'm going to go from the bottom upward. We've done very well in terms of universal access to education. I think we have universal access with regard to our primary schools. Our challenge in terms of retention is really in grades 10 and 12. That's where it dropped from almost 100% to about 80 to 85% from across the provinces. And that is where we've got to look at issues that have been previously raised, with teenage pregnancy, the dropouts, what are the contributing factors to dropouts, and how do you retain them? You've got to look at it systemically. And that's the challenge that we have. And in that context, I just want, I'm so glad the Honourable spoke about the comparison in terms of infrastructure between Zimbabwe and South Africa, or Mozambique and South Africa. Just about 3 years ago, the four at most, I was in Tanzania. They've got a wonderful system of education. But in Tanzania, one out of every two children can go to a high school. It is only the best that go to a high school. And so obviously the best performers are in high school, so it creates a distortion in terms of the tests and so forth as well. They are moving towards universal access. But I'm saying that was the reality, whereas we were already almost universal, especially in terms of your senior phase before the SEP phase. So what we say with regard to Millennium Development Goals, in terms of universal, we've complied. In terms of girl learners, we've done extremely well. In fact, our girl learners achieved our boy learners in terms of enrollment. And Malusi will tell you also in terms of performance across the board. So that's good news. And then in terms of institutions, the level of passes and graduations among female students is higher than among male students. And we've got to strengthen their ability in areas of mathematics and science, and there the gap is becoming narrower. Now, we then go down to the oversight report, and what we're saying, and we agree with what your suggestion, that whilst we're not expected to do so, we're already telling you that we've already started looking at these issues. But Mr. Benton has a particular responsibility that she might want to add to that particular aspect. We then go to the issues of financial discipline, which was spoken to. Now, there are three different things that are happening. One has always been happening, but it's more pronounced, is that our CFO has set up a team that goes with Treasury to the provinces. He's always been doing it in the past, but now it's strong. Secondly, we engage the Auditor General, engages with us as a national department, providing us insight into provincial challenges, and also we engage with the provinces regarding this particular matter. Now, the challenge those provinces face is more particularly about performance audits. So if you're going to say, like I said, and that's a reality, in fact that's what I said to us, you say in terms of your performance outputs, you're going to feed 11 o'clock. We come over there and you feed at 1 o'clock. That's a deviation. So you'd rather say we will feed between the hours of 8 o'clock and 12 o'clock. We can't then challenge you. I mean, it's technical, it might sound very silly, but that is the reality. That is the reality. So the standards and the norms that provinces set in terms of what they're going to do according to their plans are what inform the Auditor General when she or he does the audit. And the qualifications, by and large, arise not in terms of financial management of the resources, but more in terms of performance targets that they have achieved or delivered from, without legitimate reason. Now, what they have also told us, and that's why, in fact, they told us, look, this initial department, if you see something wrong in a province, you mustn't just raise it, you must write to them. And if they don't respond, you write to them again and say, these are the steps I'm going to take, and copy the Auditor General. So that when they check on our interventions, we can't say that we've spoken to the MECs and we've done with every meeting. They see a paper trail of steps that are taken by the National Department in terms of that. So the same would apply then in terms of the provinces. We've got to share that particular aspect with you. With regard to court cases, I'll ask Anton to speak to that. But just in general terms, the National Department, if my memory serves me right, for the past 3-4 years has not lost a case. The advantage is that we basically take personal charge of it. But a minefield for litigation, in fact, a paradise for litigants, is the Eastern Cape. People are getting very, very rich and expensive. Eastern Cape, and now they're finding space also in Limpopo. Because these institutions are under administration, because of poor governance and everything is not right. Now, while you are correcting it, they are litigating against you. What we've done as a national department, submission has already been signed, and probably we've already selected it. We are sending our boss to dedicate the people to help with the litigation department in the Eastern Cape. Now, you might ask why. Even in the Eastern Cape, people don't understand the complexities of governance. You have what you call a multi-service arrangement. The legal team sits in the previous offices and serves all the departments, not a dedicated team for the Department of Education. And you have hundreds of letters of demand that go unresponded to, summonses that are not dealt with, and we basically have helped there and we will continue to help there. But the details in terms of the amount will be provided, and I am reasonably comfortable that we will have an improvement there. With regards to Funza Lushaka itself, now, Funza Lushaka, I don't think there's been any reduction numbers. We've put just more than 14,000 people there. We've done two three different things. One is we've given the district an important role to play in terms of identifying candidates. Two, we've asked the universities not only on the basis of passes to enlist people, but also on the basis of interviews where a person has a passion to teach. So you can be clever, but you don't have a desire to teach. It's not good enough. If you want to do medicine, universities interview you to become a doctor. To say, what is it that, why do you want to become a doctor? And that becomes a basis for admission, and we say the same as applies to our teachers. What we can say to you is the quality of people that are applying for to become teachers has increased, threshold has increased very, very high. And the conversation is taking place between Kepak Kutama and his team and higher education in terms of this particular process. I'm much more comfortable, and we are also saying that this issue of deploying to a province only doesn't work. That we've got to basically, it's a deployment, in other words, once you are a visitor, you can be deployed anywhere. You might indicate your choices, but if there is no place in that particular province, you go elsewhere. It has already become a reality because in PE, for example, when we had a challenge just recently of Afrikaans-speaking teachers, we had 42 Funza Lushaka teachers from other provinces who were deployed there to help us in terms of filling those positions over there. So we are learning as we go along, but I think the management and administration of that would be better. Now, the issue of rural challenges has been raised by several honorable members, and I'm just going to speak generically about it. The first is that migration is a reality, not only in South Africa, but throughout the world. And that you are going to have rural to urban migration on the basis of economic need and opportunity. So people move. And in fact, the consequences of that is, because it's greatly an honorable member, but this is, is that you have numbers diminishing in the province, in the schools of rural areas. So you would then have an oversupply of teachers, and a reduction of number of learners, and this overpopulation in an urban school with lesser teachers. And then you've got to basically turn around to get the rural teacher with particular skills who you basically drawn to the area with the incentives to go back to the urban area. That is the one contribution. The other contradiction and the other reality is those of us that are from Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape would know, especially if you take your Bizani area, the Siki-Siki areas over there, you would know that one of the challenges is it's not hard to teach school, it's hard to reach schools. Just to get to the school from a town is a challenge. And therefore, we have told the ASEED program to say that when you build a school, and they are building beautiful schools, keep provision for two or three simple structures with electricity, bathroom, toilet, dining room, kitchenette, for a teacher who could spend Monday to Friday. And you don't charge the teacher. But Allah, you stay there, that's part of the retention. That teacher would then basically be able to contribute meaningfully. Otherwise, he or she takes public transport, gets to school late, and he's early because public transport is leaving. Those are real contextual problems that we face. And it's not hard, it's very hard to overcome if you don't think about it politically. But we are looking at that, so it's a question of incentives and rewards, and a question of basically monitoring it. But what we should look at in the context is that what we've achieved, the department has done quite well, and I hope by the end of the financial year we'll have completed the task. 92% of our learners are now on our learning system. So we could tell you who the learner is, who his or her parents are, what the address is, what the school is, how they're performing in ENA. If the learner leaves and goes to another school, that number then will follow that learner, and you'll be able to know exactly who the learners are in a particular school. So then your discussions in terms of numbers in schools and so forth is reduced, your planning improves in terms of infrastructure, and you are able to do better with your resources. So I also that help in terms of migration. With regard to the ASEED schools, currently the last is that 82 schools have been completed. 82 schools. In the East, in the Western Cape, we've completed, I know I've been involved in the delivery of three already. Beautiful state-of-the-art schools. Beautiful, I mean, really smart. busy with another 9, which I do believe we should be finished by the end of the financial year, and in the next phase, in Labuan. In the Eastern Cape, we've done more than 70 schools over there, and there's about 150 schools in different phases of development. Some are start construction, some are in planning, some are in tender stage. But what we had to do in the ACD program is that three lessons that we learned. First is that the assumption that agencies can do the work better than yourselves. It's not true. Secondly, we had to recognize that you require capacity within the Department of Education to be able to monitor that. To the extent that we, the Deputy Minister of Basic Education and the current Minister of Finance, had to basically sit with contractors, who could not believe it, and vendors and DBS and agencies to make sure that it was on track. Now that's not part of our responsibility. You don't want to get down there, but if you don't get down there, you're not going to have delivery in your schools. So when we told our people last year, in the middle of July, the minister said every year, every week we'll be delivering in school, it has become a reality now. People don't even talk about it because no, it's happening. But it doesn't just happen. Now, as we increase the capacity within the province, we are also, our national department, we've also increased the capacity within provinces. So provinces now have engineers, contract surveyors, and architects available to them. And that human capacity is so critical for infrastructure problems, and I do believe we have a better future insofar as that is concerned. We then go to the talk, and I'm just going to go very quickly because I know your time is running out over here, and I'm sorry about it. The flag. The flag is a wonderful initiative. We support it as part of your patriotism, as part of your anthem, your flag, are very, very critical for social cohesion and nation building, and we certainly celebrate that. With regard to matriculants, and particularly in the Northern Cape, the decision had to be taken as to what is in the best interest of the child. It means that we're going to speak to the stakeholders, the children themselves, the teachers, and the parents. And unless we have that satisfaction, the child can now basically, you can imagine the emotional strain if a child has to do 7 months of work in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It doesn't make sense. It's a disadvantage in the child. And it was a rational decision to tell them not to do so. With regard to the other schools, they sent out a circular, and I did receive a report yesterday from the health department, to each and every school to find out whether they had the ability to be able to catch up. So obviously in primary school is much easier, in high school it's less. But the reality is that parents themselves have decided that they've got to retreat. Because if you're going to basically get the child to cut now, under these circumstances, the child is going to suffer inevitably over there. So broadly, there are a few schools that are benefit from the report and I receive who have the capacity because they started earlier, but the other schools, most of the schools, are basically where the learners would indeed be repeating in the excerpt that you spoke about. We emphasize the issue of textbooks, the tables. It's very, very difficult because this year is a year of top-up. Except for the grade 12s, the others are all top-ups, and indeed we're not effective in our tables process. So it's been a subject of discussion in HEDCOM and in the Council of Education Ministers meeting, so we support you out there. I think I've dealt with the issues of level 4 and the ABET. I'm not going to repeat that. HIV and AIDS. We've developed a particular strategy for HIV and AIDS, which is aligned with the National Strategic Plan, and it includes TB, which is amended the curriculum itself. We think prevention is very, very critical, and we strengthen the capacity in terms of our teacher development programs to ensure that they're able to do this much more efficiently. And obviously, the issue of unions is very critical. I think Mr. Kinnabal raised the issue of unions, and we are in conversation with all unions. And I don't think we shouldn't overgeneralize. There are many thousands of union members who do wonderful, extraordinary work under very difficult circumstances. Teaching over councils, deep rural areas, and things. You know, when you see, I mean, you see what happened in your national schools, quite effective. But it's a combination of a participation among 850,000 learners who are supported voluntarily by educators. And take it away, most of them are from the bigger union. Who do that, and they provide extraordinary work. We now have the school sport project into a breakdown of the members. More than 14,000 schools are participating. Who's doing the extramural? It's the educators. But there are some educators that are really, really bringing the profession to dispute. And I think, and I agree, we must deal with them very strictly, ensure that our union leaders are with us in so far as that is concerned. The younger teachers, the Kundal Shaka is a solution. And just to give you one example, in this case, for example, which is an agreement, that where there is a substantive vacancy, it will be filled by a qualified additional teacher, and in his or her absence, by a Pundami Shaka graduate, and in his or her absence, it's applicable to the temporary qualified teacher and the other resources. And I think that the acting DC problem must be resolved. I think the investigator has a responsibility ensuring that this occurs sooner rather than later. You can't have the DGs or acting DGs in limbo for such a long time in permanent leadership. I'm not even going to disagree. We dealt with the issue of rural visits. The private school accreditation is a huge task. And I think what Uma Lucy is saying is that it's an area that where there's an increased number of applications, and they would basically be able to pay more attention to it. So organizationally, they would look at that particular area, and I don't think they would be averse to that. I'm speaking on their behalf. TVET falls within higher education and training, but I'm glad that most of the functions in KSB are there, because I too have looked at those and I addressed in earlier life, and I'm glad that people actually give a report that in most of them there's an improvement and less of them. With regard to standards, I know where we're going to get Lucy helping out here. The last report that appeared came from a business analysis of engagement with business people to say what we think about standard education. It was not scientific, it was not a critical method. We are not anywhere where we should be. I certainly believe we are slightly below average. Yet, Pearls and Tim's indicate that South Africa has made wonderful progress both in terms of literacy and numeracy. So the positive signs are there. And in terms of our interventions in through literacy and numeracy, we are beginning to see that. Now, I'll just end up with Ms. Glamini over here, your dashboard. The dashboard is based on the three colors. The government's outcome-based assessment policy says you've got to say green, amber, and red. Amber is where you've got to be cautious. There's a risk that you might not achieve your target. You are doing reasonably well, but not well enough. Monitor it, be careful. If you don't look after it, you're going to lose out. Red means that you are in danger. Either you have not delivered or you've got serious problems. And green means you are though it's going well. So I think we have to retain the dashboard, but we might have to give more detail in terms of the narrative with regard to those areas that you correctly identified, so that you can distinguish between green and amber in a way that makes sense. So there's no disagreement with regard to that. Corporal punishment in private school, I think we'll send a message very, very clearly that we're not going to condone or accept it. It's unconstitutional, it's illegal, and it's unlawful. Do we take your issue seriously? Just to give you an example, here's your visits reduced to a two-pager in terms of every school that you visit out here. If you haven't told it in the NCOP, everything that you say here is noted and interventions are made. So what the honourable members do to us here is taken very, very seriously. I'm sorry I've spoken so much, but I thought I'd help my colleagues also from Uma Lucy as well as the senior management in terms of the response. Thank you very much.
Deputy Minister, we have actually covered everything. We are not going to worry the officials as to make additions here and there. Let us hand over to Uma Lucy to respond to a few questions that are supposed to be holding, and then we will wind off. Thank you. It's been absolutely exhausted time allocated for the group.
Thank you. I will say I will be very brief, and the executive team will answer most of the questions, but in different brevity, let me say, if I start with the question by Honourable Zani, it's an honest question, are we really as bad, basically, as the media would like us to portray, and Honourable Philip has also raised the same question. I think that the Deputy Minister has referred to the one result that has grabbed the media attention, which is the World Economic Forum, which said South Africa is bottom of the class in math and science. That was released this year, and there was another phase last year. There were 148 countries in the study, and we came 148. Now, and then they also ranked South Africa 146 out of 148 in terms of overall quality of education as compared to the rest of the world. I think it's important maybe just to say very quickly, as the Deputy Minister said, the methodology was extremely spurious, and it only appeals to those that want to have an impression.
and there are many of us. You know, our national psyche has been so influenced by the media that we want to believe negative things. So I do think if we're going to improve the system, the quality of education in this country, we have to face the brutal facts, not the brutal myths. There are a lot of brutal myths. And I think as informed people, we must make a distinction between those two. So in this particular case, as Deputy Minister said, about 50 businessmen were asked, okay, on a scale of 1 to 7, what do you think South Africa's standing is in regard to math and science? They were about. It was amazing. And those were 50 people, gave an average of 1.9 out of 7 being the best. And this was now reported all over the world. And it was extremely problematic methodology. The media, of course, had a feast. I also want to say this other scale that they have, where South Africa was ranked only above Libya and Yemen on the overall quality of education. If you look at a real test, Honourable Chair, which is you need a standardized sample, then you can compare. Now, they were the second test, which are, you know, it's in the region here. I think there were 15 countries. 15 countries in our region, Malawi, Tanzania, and so on. And they were ranked in math and science. Now, in that particular case, we have a standard group of grade 6 learners in each country and teachers. They were asked the same question. And in that case, South Africa came out 8 out of the 15 countries. The countries above us were exactly those countries that the Deputy Minister said that were much more selective when it comes from primary to higher. So they were much more select group that have gone into high school. So I just want to say that one thing. The other point to make there is that those countries like Zambia in fact ranked last, yet they were placed on the World Economic Forum test 76 and South Africa 148. So something is wrong. There are other countries like that have been placed, there are several countries that have been placed been above us in the World Economic Forum, but in some of the world below us. Similar. So I just want to say, for Umelusi, the question is not so much how do we compare with the rest of the world, but are we getting better as a country? And there are several things that we can use if we don't have time to talk about that. One thing that we should not use as the only indicator of quality is the metric pass rate. The pass rate is not a good indicator of quality. It's not useless, but it's not the only one. We have to look at the quality of the passes. And I will stop here, but there are ways to unpack the quality of the passes. For example, how many university passes? In 1994, we had about 18% of those at Robotrick getting university. Now it's close to 30%. Yeah. The Malusi's job is to make sure that the A remains the A. If we do that, then we've lost. You know, the shepherd, honorable member, is the custodian of the assets. And if you lost the sheep, you've lost it. And if you lost quality, you've lost it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I want to start off where Professor Homik left off in terms of how our standards compare with other countries. I'm not going to go into SACMEC and the PERS, as the engineers have done that adequately. What we do whenever there is a new curriculum that is introduced is we do research. And with the National Standards Today, we compare the curriculum and assessment standards with Namibia, our neighbor. And we also compared with the Cambridge International Examinations and the International Baccalaureates. Those reports, we have them on our site, as you might say. Where in every subject that we compared with these other organizations, it will indicate where South Africa is strong and where it is weak. And where it is weak is not in the majority of cases that we make a recommendation as to how we have to pick the curriculum to make it strong. And those things have been tended to. That is why I'm able to vouch for the quality of education in our country, because we benchmark with the international body, because international baccalaureate, you find it all over the world. They're offering programs all over the world. So is the CIE, Cambridge International Examinations. We don't really end up with the National Senior Certificate. We are done for a comparative analysis of foundation phase, as offered by the department, with Kenya, Singapore, Canada, those three. And we've got also reports to say where is our curriculum strong and where may it be weak. And in the instance where it is weak, we also make recommendations that it be strengthened. So all these reports, Honourable Chair, are on our website. And as to what happened to the recommendations, the department has attended to those recommendations. Because we also, as part of our mandate, have to advise the minister on whatever we observe as a majesty. On the question of the independent schools, we have a partnership with the provincial education department. What they do with independent schools is that their role is to register them. Whether we check documentation from the municipality, whether this infrastructure, where they are going to be operating, is adequate for the learner and so forth and so on. They're checking the qualifications of the educators, the citizenship of the educators and the owners and so forth and so on. What the ministry does is accreditation. The provincial education departments will do registration, will do accreditation. In accreditation, we focus on curriculum and assessment. It's the delivery of the curriculum and assessment. But we don't also overlook elements that registration will consider. For instance, we'll look at the qualifications of the teachers, because those teachers are going to deliver the curriculum. We look at the safe registration of the educators before you give accreditation. Now, the institutions that administer corporal punishments, the institutions that cheat in the examinations have to be registered. And when it comes to the examinations, we monitor the examinations with the Department of Basic Education Head Office. We do the monitoring with the Department of the Provincial Education Department, and we might also send out these monitors. So we monitor the system, whether it is private or public institutions. I think that will suffice for independent schools. I need to get to the issue of the monitoring of the independent schools. That did not happen according to a report last year. What happened is that towards the end of 2012, the minister approved the Gazette on Evaluation and Accreditation of Independent Schools. So that was gazetted. And after the minister had gazetted that policy, we had to do the planning for the new phases, new approach to accreditation as indicated in the Gazette and in the policy. Now, we are in the different phases of monitoring, evaluation, and accreditation. And we have started this year with more momentum compared to last year. So we're waiting for the Gazette. We are site visiting, and we have the personnel to do the site visits, as indicated in our report. Honorable Mumbri indicated that there is confusion around ABET level 4 and NCO level 4 qualifications. We identified that problem, and it is in May in Limpopo. Umalus is being advocacy of his sub-framework of qualifications in Limpopo. ABET level 4 is, in fact, NCS level 1 qualification. What is confusing to the learners is this ABET level 4. They confuse it with NCS level 4. Umalus has interacted with the provincial education officials. It has interacted with a number of stakeholders in Limpopo in order to clarify this issue. Because the way things are happening is that a level 2 and the NSC not do well. That is true. But even having done NSC, they will not improve their symbols in the NSC. They will go on to do a better score. Even at the same level. So our advocacy is going to help to deal with this problem. Regarding the late changes that we have at UMass, I need to indicate that the outgoing council approved 15 posts. And then it is the post that we're reporting on in the annual report. That's before they left, they approved those posts. So we're reporting on those posts. And what we do as the executive management, the two of us, is that we have monthly meetings as this collective, and we monitor the progress that we are making with the appointments, with our staff in different panels. And where there are blockages, we try and unblock them. I'll start an example of one blockage that we have. We are not able to identify experts in curriculum development. And we've intervened and we've unblocked the system that we have. So the executive management of the organization is on top of the situation there. Final point, Chair. is on the CZ workshops that are CETA accredited. You've noticed that the QCTO also has a stake at FET College at CETA. So the CETA would go and quality show the workshops under the banner of the QCTO as a quality council. But UMALUS also benefits because those very same workshops are used for the program that UMALUS offers, the MCV and the M-courses. And what we do is we look at the utilization of those workshops when you look at the internal assessment of classes, where we have to go and do some electrical work practically. So we benefit where a workshop has been developed in the CETA. And over and above that, we also do internal continuous assessment of institutions. So we benefit with the workshops that are attended by the CETA in the different fields of their specialization. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we've come to the end of the responses by both the department and UMALUS. Let's conclude our engagement by thanking the department very much, Deputy Minister, for coming over and actually making very important and clarifying issues in the manner in which you have. Just a few points on the issues that I think need to be followed up. One, it is always very evident that you can never have sufficient time to engage with the department given the magnitude of the task at hand. And we all know it is very difficult as a group to get extra time to engage, but we are going to try our best. The same applies to UMALUS. UMALUS, this cannot be mass engagement. Your entity is quite intricate. It needs a further exploration and understanding until you come in full grips with what the mandate is all about and how far does it extend. With respect to the basic education minister, this issue of acidity, there is actually occasion to the under expenditure. Maybe a follow-up needs to be done quite strongly in terms of, because what I don't understand is prior to engaging the contractor, don't they conduct due diligence to ascertain the ability to perform the task? Because it, in the final analysis, it creates a bad picture on the side of the auditor general. I do compare with you, it's going to give us a lot of savings if we centralize the performance of MTSA. That suggestion by the department is quite welcome. Let us try it and see how it is going to assist the department. The accreditation policy by the minister in 2014, I was just wondering in my mind is what happened to the certificates that were issued prior to that? The validity of the certificates that were issued prior to that? What was the situation in this regard? We do commend you for the introduction of the LORES system to be able to give us information ready. With regards to UMALUS, as I've said, I like your proposal of IRC, that calibration and the issues relating to that. And maybe we could make a follow-up on that. It's going to give us much more greater quality in our entity engagement. The relationship between UMALUS and the accrediting seekers. Okay, we're going to take this issue here next time around we engage, because I didn't quite get the response very clearly. With those few issues that you have been able to pick up, we do want to commend you, basic education, because when we reach the report of the committee, we do note that you actually have exceeded the target. In many areas where you exceed the target, you exceed. You set yourself the target, and then you exceed it. To me, that says that you are not always responding and responding by way of the whole of duty. You go an extra mile to ensure that you beat the target that you have set yourself. So it's only on a few areas where one did take note of the fact that you are not able to reach the target as you had learned as a department. With those two words, and members, I know we've laid out the point. Our state
and the responses by the sectors that are engaging with the committee in future. Thank you very much. Meeting agenda. Megan, come in. Members, quickly, let's just look at the minutes of the 29th of October. It was in this very venue. Members, have minutes, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Anything to correct against one? Members,
I don't know, I can hear from that report.
I can hear from that report.
Maybe you can connect with